It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech. What a show. Ed Bott is here. Larry Maggott and Father Robert Ballesteir. I got to ask Father Robert about Pope Francis's first line of code. We'll also talk about the new Google Stadia, DARPA's open source voting system, and Apple's big pivot. It's all coming up next on TWiT.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 711, recorded Sunday, March 24th, 2019. Your pain is their business model. This Week in Tech is brought to you by Butcher Box, better meat for a better you. Free from added antibiotics and hormones, humanely raised and delivered to your door. For $20 off your first box and 2 pounds of ground beef a month for the life of your membership, free. Wow. Go to butcherbox.com/twit. And enter TWIT at checkout. And by Atlassian. Atlassian software powers the full spectrum of collaboration between IT teams and the rest of your organization. Visit Atlassian.com/IT to see what IT can be by giving their products a try for free. And by DigitalOcean, the simplest cloud platform for developers and teams. Deploy, manage, and scale cloud applications faster and more efficiently with DigitalOcean. Sign up today and receive a free $100 credit at do.co/twit. And by Capterra. Find the right tools to make an informed software decision for your business. Visit Capterra's free website at capterra.com/twit. It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech, the show where we get together and talk about the big tech stories of the week. Joining us, I like your New Mexican flag over your shoulder there, Ed Bott from, what does that say, Wild?
No, it says Wilco.
Oh, I get it. It's a Wilco album.
It's a Wilco poster from when they played at the Santa Fe Opera a couple years ago.
Nice. But it has kind of the New Mexican flag, sort of.
And I put that there just so that you can, as a little visual cue, so you can remember what state I live in. It's not Arizona.
You're giving me credit, though, for knowing that that's the New Mexican flag. But I did know, so thank you. All the way from Albuquerque.
Still wrong.
Still wrong?
Still wrong.
Santa Fe. New Mexico. Yeah. Thank you.
Exactly.
It's great
right.
to have you. He's the creator of the Ed Bott Report on ZDNet. Actually, some other guy created it. But once they realized it was called the Ed Bott Report, they said, we better get Bott. Great to have you, Ed. Longtime friend going back to the early days of Dvorak on computers in the early 90s. Wow. It doesn't seem so long ago. Larry Maggott is also here. Late in his career, he was covering Windows 95, CBS News Radio, and ConnectSafely.org. Larry, great to have you.
Yeah, we covered the Abacus.
Larry's mic is not working. There it is.
Oh, God. My wife must have something to do with this. Here I am.
Now it's working. That's the old military percussive repair technique. Yeah.
That's how we used to fix Apple IIs.
Yeah. Hey, wait a minute. Holy cow. My eyes deceive me all the way from the Vatican, where the Pope just wrote his first line of code.
Yes.
Father Robert Ballesteir, the digital Jesuit, what brings you to our neck of the woods?
The papal teleporter. Nice. Actually, we just perfected it, and I've got all my appendages, so I think it's doing pretty well.
Fingers left behind. I like that.
Yeah.
So it is true, isn't it? I saw this on Slashdot. The Holy Father wrote a line of code.
He did.
With code.org.
It wasn't the most advanced line of code ever.
No, but it did something,
which
is good.
It did something. It absolutely did something. And this is, we've been pushing this more and more because this Pope is actually amenable to using things from the modern world. So he actually, he was the first Pope to really use Twitter. He was the first Pope to really use social media. He actually uses our app, the app that comes out of our office, Click to Pray. That was the app that he pushed.
Click to Pray?
Click to Pray. Yeah. That's actually a Jesuit thing. So, yeah.
It sounds like a movie that took place in Indonesia.
It does, right?
I have to say, he looks like he's using an iPad Pro, but I could be wrong.
He has many different types of tech that get put in front of him. He actually doesn't own any of that. There's none of that's kept in his room. He doesn't keep any of that in his office. It's just brought to him when it's required.
Three young students and Hardy Partovi, who is the head of code.org. And here's the line of code that the Pope Francis wrote. Set screen, parenthesis,
for
quote,
the poor.
Pour la paz.
For the peace.
For peace, end quote.
parenthesis, he didn't forget his semicolon. When he executed it, it showed that text on a commemorative plaque bearing the statement, computer science empowers young people to create peace in their communities. Everyone should learn how to harness technology to use their creative power por la paz.
You know, that's not very different than my first line of code, except with print something or other.
Yeah, print por la paz.
Quote something. I don't know.
Go to 10.
Print hello world.
Yeah. Yeah.
The first piece of code that we suggested was 10 God 20 go to 10.
That would have been really funny. Had he done that, I think the world would have sat up and taken notice. The world did sit up and take notice earlier today when the Attorney General sent a letter to Congress summarizing the Mueller report's conclusions. And I thought the letter was very interesting. It did acknowledge that, in fact, the Russians had attempted to, and this was what the Mueller investigation was about, is about Russian influence in the election. They indicted a great number of Russian nationals, mm-hmm. along with Trump's campaign chairman, but for other problems, other things. Was he indicted? Yeah, he was indicted by the Mueller investigation.
Yeah, sure.
But most importantly, according to Attorney General Barr, there is no evidence of the Trump organization, the Trump campaign, or the president himself in any way working with the Russians in the...
Did they say no evidence or no evidence?
Let me read you the letter, because it's a little complicated.
Yeah. The evidence isn't enough to actually indict on.
No, that was for the obstruction charge, Larry.
Well, no, that's a different story. But I'm just saying, I don't know if he said no evidence.
So,
I see the word there.
It's
this,
actually,
by the way,
there's
so new. For those of you listening,
yeah, we're doing this literally as we go.
Yeah.
So I think a very complete, and I think everybody would agree, a very thorough investigation over almost 2 years by Robert Mueller. As we know, the report does not, and this is in Attorney General Barr's words, does not recommend any further indictments. There are no sealed indictments yet to be made public. Barr said that the special counsel's investigation did not find that the Trump campaign or anyone associated with it conspired or coordinated with Russia in its efforts to influence the 2016 presidential election. There was no, well, in Trump's words, no collusion, although that's not what they found.
Yeah, but no. I wonder how they explained the Trump Tower meeting. I mean,
this is not the full report. This is a summary that the Attorney General sent to Congress, and I'm sure we'll see more. The special counsel did not draw a conclusion one way or another. Again, I'm continuing to quote Barr, as to whether the examined conduct constituted obstruction. So they didn't draw a conclusion one way or the other.
He did not exonerate. He specifically said, used
the term. The special counsel states that, quote, while this report does not conclude that the president committed a crime, it does not exonerate him. However, I think it's pretty clear that the report lets Trump and his campaign off the hook completely, and definitely says there was, you know, an attempt to influence the election by the Internet Research Agency, the Russian troll farm, and the Russian government, but that the Trump administration and the Trump campaign had nothing to do with that. He said, despite many attempts by the Russians to get in touch. They didn't apparently get in touch. So I think that's a big deal, and I think it has something to do with technology because, of course, it was Facebook that was used. In fact, honestly, the one company that's not let off the hook in this case is Facebook. They don't mention Facebook in the Mueller report.
Well, they might. They don't mention the summary.
In the summary, but you're right. It probably will mention.
We haven't read the report.
Yeah.
I mean, this is an important inflection point because now everyone should reset and listen. If you've got celebrities, if you've got personalities either saying that this 100% exonerates the Trump administration and they should forever put this issue to bed, don't listen to them.
It doesn't do that
either. On the other side, if you have people who are saying, no, you have to read between the lines and this is absolutely a conviction and this is an indictment of the Trump administration, stop listening to them.
Right.
You need to start listening to the centrist positions who are actually going to take what's released of the Mueller report, and hopefully, because it completely exonerates the president of the United States, it will be released in its entirety because there's a lot more.
There will be, and we'll see more
out of that report.
This is the quote from the Barr letter. The special counsel did not find that the Trump campaign or anyone associated with it conspired or coordinated with the Russian government in these efforts, the efforts to influence the election, and hack, by the way, the Clinton campaign and the Democratic Party, despite multiple offers from Russian-affiliated officials, individuals, I should say, to assist the Trump campaign. So that is a very unequivocal.
That footnote is worth reading,
right?
Also, Leo,
in assessing the footnote right below, in assessing potential conspiracy charges, the special counsel also considered whether members of the Trump campaign coordinated with Russian election interference activities. We know that Manafort is accused of offering polling data to a Russian oligarch. The special counsel defined coordination as an agreement, tacit or express, between the Trump campaign and the Russian government on election interference. So because there was no tacit or implicit agreement.
Mm-hmm. Well, he was looking for tit for tat. And we don't have that. There is no express agreement that the Mueller investigation
and
found.
That, frankly,
said,
doesn't
if you
surprise
do this,
me.
Yeah, I will do that.
That doesn't surprise me.
Yeah.
Anyway, big news, and I'm sure there'll be a lot more to report. But I thought we just passed that
and
along.
I think the interesting thing is how is this going to affect the politics, both the potential for impeachment, the hearings that are likely to come up or maybe not. I mean, I think it's going to be a very interesting political. The next few weeks, the Democrats have got to really sort of rethink their strategy
right. In
terms of how they go after the president. There's still plenty of reasons that they can go after the president, but I think they have to rethink how they go about doing it.
But if you look at the indictments that had to do with this all were of Russian nationals. Right. The special counsel, again from the Barr letter, found that the Russian government actors successfully hacked into computers and obtained emails from persons affiliated with the Clinton campaign and Democratic Party organizations and publicly disseminated those materials through various intermediaries, including mm-hmm. WikiLeaks, and of course, the special counsel brought indictments against a number of Russian military officers.
Right. It was not a witch hunt.
Because of that.
The way I read it is there's one incontrovertible fact that you can take from this summary release, which is Mueller did his job, and he did it with integrity.
There was not a
single leak out of him. Yeah. Yeah. There wasn't a single saber rattle out of his camp. This was not a witch hunt. This was not any of the things that it was accused of being. This was a person who was tasked with the job, and he did it to the fullest of his abilities.
Right.
So let's put that away, because that's also been a huge contention over the last 2 years. This was an investigation that was asked of a man of great honor who has done a great service for this country, and he just did it again. Okay, what's next?
And we know that there's another election coming up in 2020, and that the Russians will probably not be slowed down by this report in any way. It will all start all over again if it hasn't already started all over again.
That's the technological side. That's the technology story for us, which is we've spent 2 years looking at this, and we are no more prepared for information warfare than we were in the 2016 election.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And what are we doing other than holding a hearing every once in a while and bringing a CEO to task for some privacy invasion? We should actually be looking at, well, how is this actually affecting the election process? And it's too late for the next election. You know, we've only got 2 years. We're already within the cycle. We should have been looking at this 2 years ago.
Incidentally, the news lately has been that Facebook did, in fact, talk to Cambridge Analytica and knew what they were up to long before they talked about it publicly. Facebook staff, according to the BBC, flagged Cambridge Analytica fears earlier than thought, 3 months earlier than thought, according to U.S. court documents. That was in September 2015, more than a year before the election. Facebook said it discovered this in December 2015, right, 3 months later. And there was even evidence that a Facebook board member had met with Chris Whittle, who was the whistleblower at Cambridge Analytica in that time frame. So somebody who is not off the hook by any means is Facebook. And I think we're going to hear a lot more about that.
It's interesting. I was actually at the event when Facebook announced their app ecosystem. And if you don't believe me, you can Google this, because Kara Swisher actually documented this. I asked Zuckerberg, aren't you worried that if you open up your ecosystem to independent developers that there could be some kind of a security breach? And this was back, I think, in 2010. And he didn't have a good answer. You know, he really didn't have an answer to an obvious question, which, you know, what happens if you open it up to the world? And Cambridge Analytica certainly proved that.
Yeah. Chris Wiley, not Whittle. Chris Whittle, somebody else. Chris Wiley is the the Cambridge Analytica whistleblower who we now know met with Facebook investor.
Leo, I think there was one other development this week that is probably worth noting, which was that DARPA, the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, I believe that is short for, released they're developing a new voting system.
Yeah, wasn't that interesting?
An open source
online voting
system.
Yeah,
well, it's an open source voting system, and the fact that it's not being done by a for-profit company is, and that it's open source, is those are both good things.
It's not online. I should say it's electronic voting, but it is. Intended that companies like Diebold will adopt this system. I don't know if they will, but it does have a paper trail, which is something that computer scientists and security experts have long said has to be included in any voting system. DARPA has spent a lot of time and money on this. We talked about it on Security Now.
Actually, according to the story I'm reading, they spent $10 million, which by government standards,
I guess that's not a lot.
Nothing.
Yeah. Sounds like a lot to me, but. Yeah. And one of the things they're going to do is they're going to bring voting machines with this new system to DEF CON, the hacker conference.
Wow.
You know, they have that voting village where they bring voting machines. And, of course, all of the voting machines in current use ended up getting hacked last year.
Right.
They're going to be publishing source code online, bring prototypes of the system to voting village this summer and next so that hackers and researchers will not only be able to freely examine the systems, but they'll also be able to conduct pen tests to try to break into it, which is great.
I was a little skeptical about it until I actually started digging into it, and I realized the company that's been contracted to do this research, they're not trying to make a product. They will not bring a product to market that will be sold. They're making the reference for it.
Right.
And that's what I actually really like. They're especially the fact that they're willing to bring it to DEF CON, that's what generates best practices. Things like what we discovered last year from the voting machines that we disassembled, where you have hard-coded credentials in firmware. You have swappable SD cards that could actually allow you to run a completely different operating system on the hardware. You know, little things like that would never have passed peer review.
Right.
Well, if you have a company that's willing to bring it to DEF CON where they know people will break it, that inspires a lot of confidence.
They're going to do two basic voting machine types. The first will be a ballot marking device that uses a touch screen so that voters can make their selections. That system won't tabulate the votes but will print out a paper ballot.
Right.
So the voters can review them before depositing them into an optical scan machine.
Is there any explanation of why DARPA? I mean, they're a defense.
I think it's exactly the kind of thing that DARPA should be doing, right? Mm-hmm. It's advanced research. The optical scan system will print a receipt with a cryptographic representation of the voter's choice. After the election, the cryptographic values for all ballots will be published online. So you can go as a voter and verify that your ballot's there and that the vote was correctly tabulated.
Open source, verifiable, and transparent.
I think this is great.
That's what we've been asking for.
The second system is an optical scan system that reads paper ballots. This is what we do in California. We get a paper ballot. We mark it by hand, kind of one of those punch cards you've seen. Mm-hmm. And that'll bring that system is going to come to DEF CON.
No hanging chads.
No hanging chads anywhere.
Let me ask the panel. How many of you voted at a polling place this last election?
Yeah. Oh, I did.
Oh, you did?
Good for you, Ed. Good for
you. I dropped off my absentee ballot at the polling place.
Was it in Santa Fe?
It was in Santa Fe.
I've been absentee ballot for the last, seven elections?
I have two. I really like going in. So what I do is I mark it at home at my leisure.
And, bring it in.
And then I go to the polling place.
I do that. And just in case I'm traveling and, reason, I want to make sure. But if I can go to the polling place, I love going there.
I do too.
I love what I used to consider old people, but now they're my age.
They are. I know.
Around.
The cops are now kids.
Yeah, I know.
But the people at the polling place are our peers.
Exactly. Yeah. That's okay.
In New Mexico, we have early voting for almost a month before the election. So although we can do ballot by mail, or we can fill them out and drop them off at the county clerk's office, or you can fill them out and drop them off at one of the early voting places. But there's a half a dozen early voting locations around town that you can go to. So it's pretty convenient. We just went and voted and then, went and had breakfast at one of our favorite restaurants around the corner. So it became a social thing. We brought a few friends with us.
Palo Alto has a ballot drop off at the libraries. They kind of look like big mailboxes. So you just put your ballot right there at the library.
That's secure.
Yeah. Well, that's true.
To answer your question, actually, I'm reading further at Motherboard. The voting system grew out of a larger DARPA program focused on developing generally secure hardware. Hmm. the program called System Security Integrated Through Hardware or Firmware, or SITH, was launched in 2017. It's apparently hard to do secure hardware. And so it was aimed at developing secure hardware and design tools to build that hardware so that hardware would be impervious to most of the software attacks prevalent today. And there's, of course,
Sith. Yeah. Oh, Lord.
Are the Sith the ones with the funny faces and the double-sided...
You know, that's not really true. I have a blender, which, as far as I can tell, is very
from
secure.
The Sith?
There's no internet connection.
Apparently, this is the quote from Sith. Software has been the way people try to solve the problems because software is adaptable. There are some hardware security solutions already, but they don't go far enough and require too much power and performance. We want to fix this in hardware. And then no matter what software vulnerabilities you have, attackers couldn't exploit them. The problem is most hardware is gullible. Did you know that? It has no way of distinguishing between acceptable and unacceptable behavior.
And you heard about the defibrillator hack that was demonstrated this week.
Nice.
Yeah, another.
These defibrillator machines are all over the place.
Well, this is actually embedded. This one actually, it's like a pacemaker. It's embedded in the patient's chest, and it comes with a radio remote control. So all you have to do is to spoof the codes on your own radio.
Oh, good.
And go control somebody's chest.
And that brings us to Pwn to Own. The Pwn to Own week was a big one. A lot of hacking going on. Pretty much everything was cracked. And a lot of it by one team, the fluoroacetate team, Amat Kama and Richard Ju, who earned, I think, close to $400,000 out of the $450,000 purse. Mm-hmm. The Pwn to Own, you know this event that happens in Vancouver every year as part of CANSEC West. The contest started, I love this play-by-play. The contest started with a team of fluoroacetate targeting the Apple Safari web browser. They successfully exploited the browser and escaped the sandbox by using an integer overflow in the browser and a heap overflow to escape the sandbox. That earned them $55,000.
Oh, good deal.
These guys hoard exploits all year long because they're going to make enough money in 3 days in Vancouver to fund the rest of the year.
Yep.
Then they came back to target the Oracle VirtualBox in the virtualization category. Their first attempt failed, but the second attempt successfully used an integer overflow and erase condition to escalate from the virtual client to PopCalc at medium integrity, whatever that means. It wasn't the erase condition that caused their failed first attempt. Their memory leak was working, but their code execution failed. Everything aligned in the second attempt. Ching, another $35,000 and three more. Master of Pwn points.
So do you really want to know what PopCalc means?
Yeah, what?
I could tell you.
What?
Well, it's the idea is that if you have successfully breached the security on somebody's remote machine, you're able to execute arbitrary code on there. And the typical way that you prove executed code on their machine is to cause the calculator app to open on their machine.
It pops the calc.
PopCalc.
Did you know that, Father Robert?
I did not know that.
That's a good, that is, thank you, Ed Bott.
Thanks, Ed.
There you go.
The calculator would not be the first application I would think to open. But that makes sense.
It's that or goatee, one or the other.
It's one of the least harmful things that they can do, but it's an absolute proof of concept.
Sure.
Hey, I was able to run code that was sitting on your machine,
right. And
you weren't able to stop me. So that's the idea.
Personally, Oracle, I would pop Notepad.
And write a little you've been pwned.
I mean, that's where Mary Jo Foley writes all their stories.
Yeah, that's right. Oh. Pwn to Own newcomer Anhad Dadin of Star Labs also targeted at Oracle VirtualBox. He used an integer underflow to escalate from the virtual client to execute his code on the hypervisor at medium integrity, and he netted $35,000.
That's actually scary. I want to see how he did that.
Getting out of these virtualization environments.
Right, breaking out of it. So
although VirtualBox is the free one, it's less likely used by, I mean, VMware, I would be more scared. I think a lot of people use it because it's free.
And I'm sure, Leo, as a Tesla owner, you're going to be happy to read
it. I'm getting there. Oh, yeah. We're going through all of them.
Okay.
We're going through them all.
I'll stand by.
VMware.
I think they actually busted VMware. They
was
busted,
cracked.
Yeah, they did an out of bounds.
Fluoroacetate earned $70,000 and 7 points for getting out of the VMware workstation. So in one day, Two guys, $160,000. Not bad. And then Phoenix and QWERTY targeted Apple's Safari. Now, there was nobody broke into OS X, but able to get into Safari is probably good enough. With a kernel elevation, they demonstrated a complete system compromise simply by creating a malicious website and browsing to it, triggering a just-in-time JIT bug followed by a heap out-of-bounds read, and then pivoted from root to kernel via time-of-check, time-of-use bug, T-O-C-T-O-U, to those in the know. Unfortunately, it was only a partial win since Apple already knew one of the bugs used in the demo. Well, that should... I'm sorry. So they got $45,000. That was just day one of Pwn to Own. Firefox also pwned. Mm-hmm. And yes, Tesla was pwned. But the pwnage...
A shiny red one.
It was a Model 3, just
they
like you're driving.
But they
today.
Gave them. They gave them
they
the
gave
car.
Them the Tesla?
It's more than they did for me.
Wait, yeah. Did they give the same Tesla that they had
Apparently
broken?
Apparently, they gave them the Tesla that they hacked into.
All they did, though, was put a message on the browser in the big window.
Is that right?
So it'd be better if they had, like...
Heck of a way to earn a free Tesla.
Turned the car off or something.
I wonder if it was the $35,000 one or if they gave one of the high-end ones.
No, I don't know. You want to know? I'll see if I can find
it. Well, 2 years ago, Tesla came to DEF CON and they actually brought a car and asked people to bang on it.
Yeah.
That's great. In fact, that's why these companies are happy to help Pwn to Own pay.
It's worth the cost of a Tesla to get to know where your vulnerability is.
Although I've always worried a little bit, Ed, about the fact that these guys are finding these exploits and sitting on them until the next Pwn to Own.
Well, that's certainly preferable to the alternative, which is to find those exploits, sit on them, and then sell them to a nation state that will use them, or to one of the variety of hacking companies that exist to serve the needs of usually authoritarian states.
Right.
Egypt has been known to buy a lot of these exploits, for example, to spy on their own people. So holding on to these things to cash them in at a contest like this is just a hell of a lot better than holding on to them so that you can sell them to someone who's going to use them maliciously.
Or even leaking them to potential copycat hackers.
Right.
Although, there's no financial incentive.
Right.
Yeah companies like Zerodium pay a lot of money to these guys and then turn around and sell it to the highest bidder.
One comment that's worth making on the whole virtualization focus there. It's sort of a red herring to think about these as just VirtualBox and VMware as applications that run on a machine. The real thing that they're looking for is the hypervisor that is increasingly a part of the security infrastructure of any modern computing device. The idea is that the hypervisor is the sort of very low layer of computing that isolates a process that's supposed to be secure from your regular desktop processes that you're using. So the hypervisor is a really core part of modern security design. And so targeting those is a really effective way of finding the most serious security flaws.
And hypervisor is built into all Windows, right? I mean, this is...
Into Windows 10 now, 10. Yes.
Yeah.
And it's a key part of features like with the new version of Windows that's coming out in the next few weeks, there's a new feature called Windows Sandbox that is based on the hypervisor. There's an Edge application guard feature that allows you to run a completely secure browser session that is managed by the hypervisor. And so it should be completely isolated from the rest of your computing environment. And there's even new application guard extensions for Chrome and Firefox, I recall reading. I haven't been able to test those yet.
Yeah, that's right.
On that Edge technology, it doesn't take away the need for a VPN in terms of somebody in the middle accessing what you're typing, does it?
No. This is a completely separate thing. This is basically a way to run an isolated browser session so that, for example, if one of the browser exploits that they came up with here, if they were able to attack, if you opened that malicious website in this secure browser, it wouldn't be able to jump into your system because it's protected by the hypervisor.
Right. At least it should be, except for the out-of-bounds exploits, which allows you to execute outside of the memory that particular virtual
machine. That brings us to day two of Pwn to Own. Arthur Kirkus of Exodus Intelligence, targeting Microsoft Edge, used a double free bug in the renderer, followed by a logic bug to bypass the sandbox. And that got him $50,000. So, of course, the good news is that'll be fixed.
That's a different sandbox.
Oh,
that's
okay.
That's not the same.
That's the Edge sandbox.
That's not the Windows sandbox feature that hasn't been released yet. That's the browser sandbox that's a part of every modern browser that prevents a low integrity process from jumping to a high integrity process. You're basically, nothing is supposed to be able to get out of the browser and into, the file system or memory or whatever. But that's a browser design thing and something different from what I was just talking about.
Got it.
Now, you see, I love these events because I love to see.
I want to go. I think they need to stream these on Twitch.
Absolutely.
This is fun.
But there's a problem.
Uh-oh.
And the problem is that while these are fascinating to see researchers at the top of their game do things with security features that we never thought they could, that's not where the biggest threat's coming from. The biggest threat on the edge of the internet are embedded devices, none of which will ever be patched. And I say that knowing that some will, obviously, but you've got a incredible tens, hundreds of millions of devices that are currently on the internet that are running old firmware that we have known exploits for, and they will never, ever be patched. And as an attacker, that's where I would be focusing. I don't need a zero-day bug in order to cause damage on the internet. I just need 10 million webcams that have never changed from their default credentials.
In the last Pwn to Own in Tokyo in November, they did an IoT Pwn to Own. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So they are trying to address this. The problem is, there are millions of IoT devices by thousands of manufacturers.
And some of which no longer exist. But those devices will still be powered on, they will still be connected, and they will still get owned.
So they, in Tokyo, did the Apple Watch, the Amazon Echo, the Google Home, the Nest IQ, and the Amazon Cloud Cam. But that's a fraction. I mean, those are all big bestsellers, but that's a fraction of the total IoT out there. And frankly, the real problem is these no-name, white-box, Chinese manufactured IoT devices that are proliferating in every home.
I don't need to own your computer if I own your router.
I get your network.
If I can see all
it.
The traffic coming in and out of your network, I don't care about owning your browser.
It's easy because my username is admin and so is my password.
One, two, three. One, two, three, four.
No, I'm serious. That's, in my case,
that's the default.
That's the default. And a lot
but
of
I hope you changed that.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, okay.
Unless you have one of those Comcast routers that has, say, hard-coded credentials so that they can always get in.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah.
I just set all of my passwords to 123457.
Sneaky.
Done.
Nobody will ever guess that.
Or just change the A to the @. Nobody ever guesses that.
Lead speak. It's your friend. Fluoroacetate was the team that hacked the Tesla. They used a just-in-time bug in the renderer to break into the Tesla browser and display their own message. Doesn't say what the message was. I hope it was obscene. And they get the car. You get a new car. They fluoroacetate, the big winners of the $545,000 awarded at Pwn to Own this week. They got $375,000.
Good day.
So, and they did that well, I think, last time, too. They're really, it's just these two guys, Richard Ju and Amat Kama, and they are, here's their, show the picture. Let's give them credit with the big Pwn to Own trophy.
Good for them.
That's enough money for them to, live another year. They'll live till the next Pwn to Own.
That's right. Live well.
Nice
job. Where are they from?
Don't know. America. I have to say, though, kids, you want a good job with a future? Learn how to crack.
Yeah, but
learn
how to fuzz. That's two guys. How many people have tried to?
Well, there's a pretty brisk group of people. What was it, Hacker One? There's a number of organizations that buy these exploits. Zerodium is one that maybe is a little sketch, but Hacker One is a little bit more benign because they end up, I'm pretty sure, giving the exploits to the companies that create the software for fixing. They were the ones that publicized this young kid from Argentina. It's like 19 years old. First hacker to make $1 million in one year with exploits. So I think there's money to be made. You're right. You got to be good.
And in general, there's money to be made, at least as a good career in technology security. I mean, whether you're a hacker or not, just security, the whole security industry is hungry for talented
people.
There's a hierarchy.
HackerOne is an interesting business because they are essentially funded by the companies, not by bad guys, not by autocrats in you know, other nations, but by the companies. And it's a place for somebody to go who wants a career. In fact, they have a whole page for hackers at HackerOne that tells you how to start. Enjoy the thrill of the hunt.
And stay out of jail.
Yeah.
All three. Wow.
Hack all the things. Use your skills to make a safer internet. They've got a leaderboard. Should we see the leaderboard? Here's the top HackerOne hackers and their earnings. Oh, I guess it's not earnings. It's just a reputation. Today is New has the highest reputation score. I think it's pretty cool, right? Yeah, this is fun.
The best hackers I know will never be on that board.
They don't want to be on that board.
Yeah, that's the point.
They don't want somebody knocking at their door. Yeah. Well, all right.
But okay, look, there's nothing wrong with getting into the security field. It's a burgeoning field that will be worth a lot more. Most of us, the vast majority of us, and I count myself in this, we're just a level above Script Kiddie. Yeah. I can use exploits. I understand.
You're a pretty adept hacker.
I'm adept, but there is that level that's way above me and I will never be. The people who actually come up with the original exploits that I will end up using.
You know how to put together Wireshark and Map and do stuff. Mm-hmm. But I think it's almost a genetic thing that they just can kind of intuit where to look. People like the Google zero-day guy, Travis...
Tavis Ormandy.
Tavis, yeah. Who is like, he said, I was in the shower and I was thinking about it and I said, wait a minute. And he found him. I can't remember what the bug was, but it's like Tavis's shower thoughts. I think there is a certain skill set that's fascinating that some of these people have.
Well, and I think the difference between people who are good at something and people who are great at it is, you know, the difference between a scratch golfer and a pro.
Yeah.
And you know, there's a lot of scratch golfers in the world.
Yep.
But yet you watch them try and turn pro and
it's not easy.
Right.
It's not easy. It's
something magic. Here's the Tavis tweet from 2017. Aha. I had an epiphany in the shower this morning and realized how to get code exec on LastPass 4.1.43. You know, if you're thinking of this stuff in the shower and going, might be better than a scratch golfer.
Last week I had an epiphany in the shower. I was like, I think we have hot eggs this morning. That's
I honestly, I know why you have epiphanies in the shower. It's the hot water. It's open. It's dilating the vessels.
We don't have hot water in the Vatican. So.
What? You have to take cold showers?
It's better that way.
It's going too far. Here's the picture of the fluoroacetate winnings in the trunk of the Tesla.
Look at that.
As they drove off. Look at those. They got three laptops, a trophy.
That's
hundreds
amazing.
Hundreds of thousands of dollars.
I didn't realize that Tesla had that much trunk space.
It's a great trunk. The red paint cost $2,500 extra. Yeah, you paid
$2,500.
Yeah. That's true.
We Tesla owners are sucklers.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Wait, did you pay the extra $5,000 for the red brake calipers?
I did.
You did?
No, did you?
Yeah.
For the calipers?
I loaded it.
Powder-coated, baby.
I figured...
Everyone loves you.
Got to keep that resale value up. Yeah. Well, it was bad. You know, see, we were talking about this before the show, because you recently bought a Model 3.
Well, no, I bought in December before it went down by $6,000.
You kind of got screwed.
Kind of.
I knew when I was buying my Tesla 3 years ago, the Model X had just come out, that I was really subsidizing
Tesla. Yeah, you knew that, yeah.
And I knew that, you know, he made up stuff like the air filtration system is bio, can handle biohazards, right?
It could save you from anthrax.
It has that biohazard symbol on it. That was like a few thousand dollars extra. I knew that was BS, that I was never going to drive through a biohazard.
Right. But you could have, Leo.
I wanted
you
to support Elon.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, this guy is a pretty good marketer.
Yeah.
Well, now I'm having second thoughts, but it's all right.
Yeah, no. Well, don't get me started on my... I love the product. I love the car. The company
is
another
story.
Worse
than faking your diesel engine emissions results.
That's a lot better than that.
Yeah.
No, look, they're great cars, and I give Elon a lot of credit for making electric cars cool.
Yes.
I mean, he definitely did that. Yes. They used to be pretty boring.
Let's take a little break. When we come back, we'll talk about Apple's event coming up tomorrow, what we can expect. Ed Bott is here. He is the king of everything tech, but I think especially I always think of you as the expert on Windows, the Ed Bott Report at ZDNet.
Thank you.
Thank you for being here. We also love having Larry Magid on. He is at CBS News Radio, where he helps normals understand technology.
Yep.
Not an easy task.
6 a.m. tomorrow morning, I'll be on the air trying to explain
Apple. You don't do that live, do you?
Oh, yeah. Well, some of it's stuff I do. It depends on what it is.
What are you going to talk about 6 a.m. tomorrow?
Well, two ways with stations. They'll call me up and they'll ask
me. Do they ask you?
Yeah, they call me up.
Larry, what are we going to see at this Apple event?
Exactly. And I say, I don't know.
I said, no. Every time they always want to know that. Yeah, I always have to say the same thing, like, well, Apple doesn't say, and no one really knows, like, but let me tell you what the rumors
are.
It's
kind of like talking about the Mueller report until today.
Right.
You just speculate.
It's all speculation.
Yeah, exactly.
Never stop anybody.
Except for Apple does a pretty – Apple leaks are better than Mueller leaks. Apple does leak.
I think there's a lot more interest.
Yeah, that too.
Sadly. Yeah. Also here, Mr. Father. The Reverend Right Reverend Father, everybody loves Padre S.J. Father Robert Ballester, the digital Jesuit. He is on leave. You're not on leave. You're always
I'm always
on duty.
Yeah.
Do you carry, I'm just wondering, because I know in the movies, the priest, when he comes running in with the last rites, the last rites kits. Do you carry a last rites kit with you?
I do not.
You can't give me the last unction, the final unction, if I would.
I could, but I would find stuff here.
Like oil to anoint me and stuff like that? You just get some olive oil from the kitchen?
I always carry a spare battery. I always carry a spare power cable. Yeah. I do not
it's
carry
a different last
kit.
Rites. Different form of last. I'm just curious. You see? You learn.
Is there a last rites app you could use?
Yes. Anything on Apple.
Wait a minute. You did tell us, though, that there is an app that you guys have. There's
yes,
a
Jesuit's. Click to Pray.
Click to Pray.
But it's not Click to Give Last Rites.
What is Click to Pray?
Click to Pray, it actually made the national news or international news a while back.
This isn't the Pokemon Go thing where you collect saints.
No, I had nothing to do with that. Okay. I had absolutely nothing to do with that. No, this the Pope actually signed up for it about a month ago, and our usership shot up from a few thousand a day to several tens
of
millions.
So you can ask the Pope to pray for you?
Kind of, yeah.
Wow.
You know, Tesla could build last rites into the screen just before the car is about to crash on autopilot.
If that pops up on screen, you're in trouble.
You're in trouble.
So if you click to pray, you click and you get a prayer?
Well, it's sort of – okay, so people who just want meditation time, it can like bring you through a quick five-minute meditation.
So this is like calm.com for Catholics.
Yeah, exactly.
That's nice.
Yeah. I mean, it's nothing groundbreaking. The big thing was that – Pope Francis signed up for an account. So now you could actually ask Pope Francis to pray for you.
Can he be my friend online?
I think we do that, yeah.
Yeah, you could open the Pope's. This is the Pope's prayer profile. And you could get his prayers, and you could pray along.
Wow.
And he enters all of that in personally.
Really? He actually
No, he doesn't.
You type it in.
Does he dictate it and you type it? Is that how it works?
There's several widgets.
He's never going to say
that work in the background to make that happen.
Let me just put it this way: there's the secrecy at the Vatican, much better than Apple.
Yeah, good security.
Yes, actually, it's really, really good.
Yeah.
Have you seen my box of meat?
I'm afraid to ask what that is.
No. It's literally
a box of meat.
Is it refrigerated?
It is. This is my butcher box.
Ooh.
I don't know if there's actually any meat in here. I think we took it all home.
Is this like Rachel Ray where the audience gets to eat it?
You get a pork chop and you get a pork chop and you and you and you. When these came, I got three of them. There was pandemonium in the office. My son came running down the hall and said, "You just got three giant boxes of meat." Butcher box. I love butcher. We had butcher box. We had some sirloin tips the other day. What a stew this made. Butcher Box is better meat for you. It's meat free from antibiotics and hormones, humanely raised, quality beef, chicken, and pork delivered right to your door. You can choose from curated boxes, including a mix of high-quality beef, chicken, and pork, or customize your own box. If you know, we do Tuesday Taco Night, Taco Tuesday, right? And we always use the ground beef from our Butcher Box. If I serve something different, everybody would know. It's grass-fed, grass-finished. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, wow.
And so the meat, I don't know if you've ever had a grass-finished meat, but it is, it's what meat used to taste like before factory farming. Meat is frozen at the peak of freshness, so it comes to you frozen in an individual, vacuum-packed, biodegradable packaging. I really like how responsible they are with the packaging. Each box is shipped with a carefully calculated amount of dry ice, so it will be, and we had a lot of fun with the dry ice when it came, by the way. So it'll be frozen, and it was frozen solid. There was no question about that after it reaches your doorstep. Of course, if there's any problem, you can immediately call Butcher Box and they'll trade for you. grass-fed, grass-finished beef, free-range organic chicken. The pork, I got to also sing its praises because I make a Friday night is a pork night at the LaPorte household. I usually will make a kind of, I call them because the kid won't eat it unless I call it Wiener Schnitzel, but I pound out the pork, I bread it and fry it, and it's delicious. And it's so much better with the pork from Butcher Box because, again, it's heritage bred pork, so it's like meat used to taste. Butcher Box believes in a healthier food system where everyone has access to meat the way nature intended. No antibiotics, no hormones, humanely raised. You'll cook with peace of mind knowing you're eating healthy, high-quality meat. And look at that bacon. You had me at bacon. Oh. Build your own box. Choose exactly how much you want for the things you love, or let them curate it so you get something new every time. Choose your delivery frequency. And, of course, there's always recipe cards inside to help you cook quality meals, lots of tips. We're going to get you $20 off your first box. My mouth is watering. And 2 pounds of ground beef a month for the life of your membership. Taco Tuesday never had it so good. For free. Let me say that again, because that is a great offer. $20 off your first box, plus free 2 pounds of ground beef every month forever, for as long as your membership is active. Go to butcherbox.com/twit. Enter twit at checkout for your extra 2 pounds of ground beef. And $20 off your first box, Butcher Box.
I'm doing it right now.
It is so good. Go to butcherbox.com/twit and enter twit at checkout. Larry, you come back and you tell me. You know, the presumption is, and I think this is true, that the new luxury for a lot of people isn't a fancy car or gold jewelry. It's good food, right. Good wine, good experiences. We've really changed how we think of if you have some discretionary funds, you don't spend it on a Rolex anymore, right? And I think that's these companies are coming along saying people don't want to go to Applebox anymore, not Applebox, Applebee's anymore.
I thought you meant
Apple. Wait, what? Is
Applebee's?
That a new product?
Yeah. No, Applebee's. Okay, nothing against Applebee's, but everything you get there is frozen and then microwaved and then put on your plate and served to you. Yeah. You might as well just stay home and do it yourself. And people are realizing that. And I think they're liking cooking again.
Yeah, well, that's what really I was thinking. I actually like cooking. And my wife
Well, that's what these boxes do is
yeah.
that instead of having a meal plan and shop, because we are busy, you say, I want to make that, and that today. And then you get the box. I do agree that there's issues. And I think the biggest issue is a competitive issue because you know Whole Food is well aware of Butcher Box and Hello Fresh. And
yeah, I wish I could cook. Safeway and buying it off the steam table.
Yeah, poor Robert has to eat bad spaghetti every day.
Well, because it's actually a law. So if you have a house that's of a certain size of people who are not related by blood, you actually have to have an institutional kitchen. So I'm not allowed to go into the kitchen.
Oh,
so
I
we
feel
have
so
no
bad
place
for
to
you.
Cook. And you know, we're in the middle of Rome, but all we get every day is pasta.
Is it at least al dente?
It's all al dente until they reserve it for dinner and then it's soaked up everything else and then it's mushy. So
we'll take up a collection for it.
To me, the greatest thing in the world, and I do it almost every day, is we have a big green egg, which is a Kamado oven. Yeah, it's thick ceramic. I fire that up every day. I pull out a nice cut of meat and I often will sous vide it. In fact, that's the nice thing about the Butcher Box. It's frozen, but I pull it out. I sous vide it the night before. It's ready to go. Throw it on the grill. It's ready in 5 minutes. And there's no restaurant that can compete.
We have a electronic key lock system at the Vatican at the Curia.
To keep you in?
Well, no, so that you can get into the different parts that you're supposed to get into. And I hacked that in the first week. Super secure. But now I can get down into the apartments that we reserve for visiting lay people. Yeah. And a few of them have kitchens.
You go down there and cook.
So I go down there. But
don't
I have to be
say
really
that.
Quiet.
You know you're on TV right now.
So tell me about the wall around the Vatican.
People always go, oh, don't you have a wall? No, yeah. We have pieces of walls.
Wall, right, yeah.
And they're very nice, and then they fall on people every once in a while.
Right, but I remember the last time I went there, there was nobody keeping me out.
No, yeah. No. I mean, you... The Swiss Guard are there.
You met the Pope, right, Larry?
I did meet the Pope. You can find a picture of me and the Pope.
Actually, Microsoft just met with the Pope. They had one of their representatives come over about a month ago. So it's becoming a place.
New York Times. Germaine, apropos our conversation today in the Sunday Times, human contact is now
a
a luxury good. Screens used to be for the elite. Now avoiding them is a status symbol. It was only a matter of time, and the great Nellie Bowles on this one. People are relishing face-to-face contact.
What a concept.
I kind of knew this was coming. I really felt it's been coming for some time, that we were getting burned out on social media. That turned out social media was anything but social. It was really anti-social. And I've never felt... In August, I killed my Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr accounts, and it was the greatest thing I've ever done. Not that I actually go out and meet people. I just stay home. But honestly, I think I was feeling ill from social media. That our friend Trey Radcliffe has just written a new book about the malign influence of social influencers on Instagram. Mm. Oh, when Instagram first came out, Trey, who's a great photographer, said, this is changing. This is like all of us. We get these very optimistic looks at what we think is happening, and then the truth sets in. He thought Instagram was going to change people's vocabulary, that a generation was going to grow up with a visual vocabulary instead of a verbal vocabulary, that people would get used to imagery and expressing themselves through imagery. And that was so exciting. And it's been ruined by people selling, you know, models selling sport tea. And it's really, anyway, so this is an interesting change.
And UNC students shilling for Amazon
OJ,
Prime.
Yes, I know who you're talking about.
I wrote my first book on electronic communications in 1983. And there was only there wasn't a single chapter on security or privacy or hacking or Russian hacking. But I mean, I was so optimistic for so long. I mean, all the way through the 80s and 90s and the early part of the 2000s, I just thought this was such a wonderful thing. And I still see the positive. But I don't think many of us really fully appreciated the negative of overuse of technology until the last couple of years.
You know, one of the things that was just written in the chat room from Alberta Guru is, oh, this is a first world problem. But it really isn't.
No.
It really, really isn't. In fact, this took hold in a lot of what we would call third world countries before it took hold in advanced countries, because electronic communications were actually more advanced in parts of Africa before they became completely ubiquitous in, say, the West. So this idea of being able to communicate, having your primary channel of communication not be face-to-face, is not limited to social media. Social media really exacerbates it. But there's something that we need to do in order to look at what kind of relationships do we actually want. I can communicate, but too often I conflate communication with relationship, and they're not the same.
Well, we were talking before we went on the air about Cardinal Taglay, the press secretary from the Philippines, that I was at an event at the Vatican where he spoke about some of the things that are going on online among his very low-income parishioners.
Oh, yeah.
And you think about the problems that we're having on Facebook. This is life-threatening stuff that these families are going through.
So I acknowledge first-world problems.
Yeah.
Absolutely, but here we are in the first world.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing more first world than the scandal of the rich parents buying their way into college.
Oh,
and you were talking, Ed Bott, about Olivia Jade. I know what you're referring to.
Yeah.
Her mom, Lori Loughlin, is accused of spending a significant amount of money to get her into USC. Was it as a soccer star or a crew star? I can't remember.
I think it was crew.
Crew.
Yeah, she wound up being the manager of the crew team. Had never done crew.
Never rowed. Yeah. But is a major Instagram influencer with, I think, more than 1 million followers. And, of course, here's two of her posts. And this is the one you were talking about. Here she is at USC in a paid partnership with Prime Student Amazon, showing how everything here she bought on Amazon, including the kind of tone-deaf OJ initials.
Yes.
Now, that's USC. Her initials, but she is at USC.
Right.
So I'm just saying that's a little...
See, but there's a generation that doesn't understand what's wrong with that.
Okay, should we explain that OJ was a famous running back at USC before OJ Simpson became
a football player. He didn't fake his way into USC.
He got into USC by running as fast as he could.
Yeah. He had a miserable life later, but at the beginning.
Loughlin is accused of spending, this blows me away, $500,000 to get her daughter into USC.
Here's the thing about this whole story, though, which is, yes, it's horrible and it's terrible and there should be outrage. This is not new. Rich people have been doing this forever. How many buildings on campuses, and I'm including some of our universities like Georgetown and Boston College, are named after rich benefactors who had legacy children who came through because, well, the building's named after mom or dad.
Mm-hmm.
It's this. to pretend like it's only happening now and it's only happening because of social media influencers, that's very disingenuous.
Oh, and it goes even deeper than that. When you think about all of the test preparation classes, right. You could spend thousands of dollars legitimately preparing your wealthy kids to get into college that poor kids can't do.
I'm just glad that Olivia Jade, now that she's at a good university, is studying hard and working and learning. And, well, wait a minute. What is she doing? It looks like she's mostly posing for Instagram, actually.
She already said that she doesn't care about school.
The cherry on top of the story was when they said, well, they had to call her back from the private yacht that was run by one of the regents because she was there for a party. It's like, oh, okay, well, yeah, that figures.
What was going on that yacht?
All right. Carson, how much did your parents pay to get you into Harvard? Because I know you didn't get it on your own.
So much. So.
There's a Carson Bondi bench.
They bought a bench. No.
They couldn't afford the bench. They just got a stool.
At Berkeley, there's a twig.
All right. Monday, tomorrow, Apple having a big event. And some have pointed out, and I think this is probably accurate, that this is going to be the day we look back on that Apple pivoted from being a hardware company to being a services company. At least that is their goal. You agree, Ed?
Oh, I think that's it's probably a good line of demarcation to have here. I think what punctuates that is the fact that they announced three products last week on Twitter that normally would have been the kind of products that would have gotten 5 to 10 minutes each on stage at next week's event. The new iPad, the new line of iPads, and
new iMacs,
new iMacs, and one other.
Yeah, they also reduced the price on the extra RAM on an iMac Pro. But you're exactly right. They didn't do these hardware announcements in public. They just slipped them in. They've done that before.
The other one was the AirPods.
Oh yeah, and the AirPods, which I ordered.
Yeah, the new AirPods. And so the idea, they've been clearly focusing on the revenue that comes from services, from monetizing their base of, I think it's 1.4 billion Apple branded devices that are out there, and you know that's a if you can get 10, 15, 20 bucks a year out of each one of those devices, that's not a lot for the owners of those devices, but that's a tremendous amount of money for Apple. And so the idea, if you go from $10 on average to $20 on average, you've just, you're up to $20 billion a year in revenue, and that's staggering.
Well, you're actually probably talking closer to $10 a month, though. I mean, the revenue potential, if you think about it, how often do the average person buy a device? Probably a computer every 3 or 4 years. A phone maybe every 2 years. If you can get somebody to subscribe and have a steady stream of revenue, that's the difference between selling a razor and selling razor blades.
Right. The point that I was making, though, is that in a lot of cases, Apple's share of that is only 30%.
Right.
And there are a significant I think there are a significant number. I mean, there's a bell curve. Right, of the distribution of services income from individual owners. There are certainly people who, they buy an app every once in a while and that's it. They don't spend another dime. On the other hand, there are people who, replace their phone every year and spend $100 a month on Apple services. Mm-hmm. So you get those in there. But I'm just talking about the share of revenue that Apple gets to keep.
Right. Revenue in the service business last year, $40 billion. That's a 33% increase year over year. And it's 15% of the total revenue. And I'm sure that it will increase each year. And it won't be long before it's more than half of the company's revenue, especially since iPhone sales and Mac sales have slowed. iPad sales have slowed. Right. They need to do this. People aren't buying new phones and new computers every 2 years.
But this is a hard pivot. This is a very hard pivot. I mean, Microsoft made this pivot fantastically successfully.
They did, didn't they?
They did. I mean, over the past 5 years, their stock has outpaced Apple by a large margin because they made the commitment to services, but they already had the infrastructure in there. They already had Azure. They already had 365. And so when they made that pivot, it made sense. Now, they had a cash cow in Dynamics, but the entire Microsoft ecosystem was set for services.
Can't you argue that Microsoft had its, you know, strengths in that kind of business cloud. But Apple has a strength that they can base this on, which is in content, consumer content sales. They've got apps. They've got music. What they're going to launch tomorrow, we're pretty sure, is a news subscription program, which will include magazines and newspapers. According to the Wall Street Journal will be in that bundle, but not the New York Times or the Washington Post. And a TV product that initially won't actually make them much money because it'll just be repackaging content from other people, but ultimately has the potential to make them money because they're making a lot of original content. And there's also a rumor, I don't know if this is true, it's kind of a lesser rumor, that they're going to do a game subscription service that will include paid games and that they will pay the game publisher a fee for every minute played so that the Apple will collect a certain amount of money and then distribute it according to which games you play the most.
And that gives Apple absolutely a leg up in services for
consumers.
This
is something they already do. They're terrible at, frankly, Apple's terrible at cloud services.
Right.
And it's smart of them to focus on content.
It's smart, but the money, where they actually want the money in services, it's not in the consumer side. It's on the enterprise side. You see, that's
You don't want to compete against Amazon, Microsoft, and Google.
But that's what the money is. You have to compete against them if you want that service money.
I don't think Apple's ever going to
enter
that
budget. Apple's never been big in the enterprise side. They've never been strong in the enterprise side. But it just strikes me that if they can figure out a way to, first of all, lock in, to the extent possible, their hardware owners – that alone is a huge market.
And create an ecosystem that is so valuable that nobody ever wants to use a Windows machine or Samsung phone.
And one of the things that always struck me, when Apple made the decision to make the iPod available for Windows, remember that the iPod was
very controversial. Steve Jobs fought that tooth and nail.
But it's what made it, it's what really made the iPod, right? And I always wonder why they can't do that with some of their other services. Why, for example, there isn't Apple Music for Android?
Right.
Because
there is.
Apple Music is on Android. Is Messages.
I'm sorry. Apple Music is.
The thing is, though, when Microsoft made the pivot, they did something that was incredibly controversial in the Windows world, and that was they basically deprecated Windows.
They did. And they said, we'll be wherever our customers are, even if it's on Linux.
Right.
And people thought Microsoft's done. But that's what allowed the pivot to work. Do you think Apple can say, okay, well, you know what? The iPhone's been big for us, but we're not. That's not the first thing we push anymore.
Microsoft is the exact opposite of what Apple will do. Yeah. You agree, Ed, that Microsoft, that was huge and unpredictable by everybody, that Satya Nadella would say, no, we're going to be open. We're going to be everywhere our customers want us to be.
I think it was the inevitable result of something that had started probably 5 years before Satya Nadella took over as CEO. You know, you need to give Steve Ballmer a lot of credit.
Really?
For having put, absolutely. You have to give Steve Ballmer a lot of credit for having given Satya Nadella the executive position and building the cloud-based businesses that made it logical for him to be promoted to CEO. Mm. The reason he was promoted to CEO was because he had been given the freedom to build those businesses.
He ran Azure before he was CEO, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Right. Exactly.
But Ballmer never would have made that pivot. Yeah, I mean, yes.
I think that's what happened. The board said, okay, now we're ready to pivot. Yeah. Thank you, Steve, for your service. Go buy a basketball team. Right. And and even though they did a very public executive search for the next CEO, as it turned out, they made the exact right choice by promoting from within.
Well, the other reason that Ballmer was allowed to buy a basketball team in Southern California is the disastrous Nokia acquisition.
Right.
Which
Nadella argued against from day one, as I remember. He was dead set against it.
Right. And one of the very first things that he did when he came on as CEO was to start the wheels in motion to unwind virtually all of that, so that today, you know, there is no Windows Phone software. The Nokia is no longer a part of Microsoft. Microsoft is not building. There's no Surface Phone, and there probably won't be.
Don't forget to give Donald Sterling some credit for Ballmer's ability. He was the guy who owned the Lakers. It was all caught up in that scandal. That's right. The Clippers.
Otherwise, Bomber wouldn't have made the pivot to NBA team owner.
Exactly.
So that's okay.
It was a series of pivots that were basically a role domino.
So, and I understand the Patriots may be up for grabs any day.
That's good. Right. Grabs. I wouldn't use that word.
So up for grab. Yeah. Well, you know what I mean. No, seriously. This has been one of the few really, truly successful business pivots that you can point at in the tech industry. It's historically a very difficult thing to do. And a lot of credit to whoever, Ballmer, Nadella, whoever. But do you think Apple's trying to do something of that magnitude?
They can't.
Well, every large company in Silicon Valley has to eventually face the fact that they have a dominant product that is, you know, both their strength and their potential downfall. And so, you know, disrupting your own product, disrupting your own key product is really important. But, you know, Apple doesn't really have any choice. They've seen the slowing in sales of their hardware products for a number of years. And although those businesses are still, they are cranking out as much revenue and profit for Apple as Windows and Office were for Microsoft back when Microsoft was preparing to do that pivot. But the writing was on the wall.
Yeah.
There's no growth there anymore.
Yeah.
And so you have to find another place where you can get some growth. The company that hasn't been able to do that at all is Google.
Which
continues to be a company that, you know, they bought Motorola and then sold it.
Right.
They keep trying to figure out ways to get into the enterprise, but they're not successful at it. They keep coming up with, frankly, interesting hardware products, but they don't turn into real businesses. Google Fiber has been, you know, at best a middling business and, you know, by some measures a failure. And so there's still a company that is, you know, 88% advertising.
And it feels like they're thrashing.
They are getting into education. I mean, they've done pretty well with it in education. But I don't know how much money
there is. But April 2nd, they're going to kill Inbox. They're going to kill Google Plus.
Yeah.
They're going to kill, what else, Allo.
They're the world's largest startup. They still run like a startup.
And I think that's intentional. Yeah. They want to. Anyway, we're going to talk about Google's big announcement this week, which is Stadia, just a little bit. But before we move on, I want to ask the one question. I think we do see tomorrow Apple making a pivot from a hardware company to a services company. We mentioned that the kind of shining difference between what Microsoft's done and what Apple's doing is Microsoft's become more open as a result of this pivot. They become more agnostic. You don't have to use Windows. You don't have to be on Microsoft hardware by any means. Apple, it sounds like, is going to double down on its ecosystem. The whole point of Apple's services, I think you were pointing this out, Larry, is not to support Samsung or Microsoft, but to support Apple and to encourage people to get locked into Apple services. Is this strategically the right play? It's very different than what Microsoft did. We could say Microsoft's been successful opening up. Apple's not opening up. Is that the right thing to do?
I think globally it's the wrong play. I mean, they may be able to do quite well in America and maybe
where they are dominant
and other parts of the developed world perhaps, but if you're thinking about the entire world, you're thinking about the developing world, it's a definitely
Samsung
a bad
owns the rest of the
absolutely,
world
absolutely because and also Samsung has a range of products at a range of price points.
Right.
There is no such thing as a cheap iPhone. There are
ironically Samsung
iPhones.
Tried and failed with the ecosystem play.
Right.
They had Samsung Milk. They had Samsung Store. They had and it was a horrible Milk was their music. In case you didn't know, it wasn't actual dairy products. It was their music.
That you could only put Samsung Milk in a Samsung refrigerator.
Terrible name. But so Samsung was not able to do the ecosystem play.
No, but they've been able to create a variety of products at a variety of price points. We only hear about the 10, the high-end ones here.
Right.
But there are Samsung phones out there that you can buy for.
People call the radio station all the time with questions like, I've got a Samsung J3.
Yeah.
What do you think? I don't know. I've never even heard of it.
Right.
Yeah, Verizon gives it away as a deal. You know, it's an Android 4 phone that, you know, you can get for free. So, there's a lot of Samsung devices.
And the other problem with Apple is, let's face it, I mean, iPhones are great, but so are Pixels, so are Samsungs. I mean,
I have to be honest with you.
Create-
the best phone I've ever used is the S10 Plus. This thing is amazing.
Yeah. I mean, and the point is that, you know, you could argue. is it better or not quite as good as the Apple, you know, 10S? But the point that you have, the fact you have to have that discussion,
right,
means that Apple's
there's no
clear
lost. Winner. Yeah.
You know, in 2007 there was no question.
Yeah, I bought a phone. Of course, it was $1,500, which Apple would love to sell me a phone for $1,500. Actually, I did think I did buy a phone from Apple for $1,500. Come to think of it, my maxed out 10S was in fact the same all price right. as the Samsung maxed out 10 Plus maxed out, but it has a terabyte of storage. It has 12 gigabytes of RAM. My iPhone has 4. It is a powerhouse. It's a desktop class processor.
That's more
in my pocket.
Yeah.
Better screen. Now, for me, one of the reasons I like the S10 Plus is because it's very customizable, which Apple is not. Mm-hmm. But I think a lot of consumers don't want all of that. What do you think, Ed? Is the Apple ecosystem play a strong play, or is it the mistake?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a very familiar play. If you look in the telecommunications industry at especially American telecommunications companies, they have historically been driven by a metric called ARPU, average revenue per user. And that, I think, is what Apple is going to with, you know, they've been really focusing on their upgrade plans, for example, which are essentially leasing.
Right, right.
You essentially wind up leasing your device from Apple, zero down, and then, you know, $35 or $40 a month for the hardware. And then on top of that, they're going to layer some services on them. And that has historically been the way that every cell phone provider in the United States, at least, has worked. And it's also been the way that the cable companies have worked. You rent the box from
but
them.
People hate it.
They upsell you.
Don't people hate it? Didn't Microsoft get a lot of heat because essentially that's what they did with Windows and Office, was turn it into a subscription product, and people hated that.
Well, and the reason that, but you know, Verizon is a very, very
okay.
large company. But that has historically, but I'm not saying that they're being like, that they're trying to become a telecommunications company. What I'm saying is that they're following what has historically been, at various times in the history, recent history of technology, a very successful yeah. business model.
You look at the triple play that the Comcast has, right?
Oh my God, I hate that.
I know. I have somebody else's internet phone system. I don't have their
internet.
I hate
that.
Yeah.
So apparently this is
there's a perfect example of it, because if you've ever, and I'm a Comcast customer, if you've ever priced out their services, you discover that it is typically cheaper to buy the bundle that has all the things in it than it is to try and put them together, you know, a little piece or two at a time. They price the individual things so high that they basically say, look, for only $10 more, you get all this stuff.
Well, it's
more.
True. I have their highest end internet service that I can get where I live. And it turns out that basic cable is actually not very much more than that.
Exactly.
So I stick with it, even though I hate
it's
it.
Incremental.
It's incremental. Yeah.
What's interesting, right. though, Ed, and is my so impression what, is it, that triple play is not cheaper than if you went to three different providers. It's only so it's really more a pitch when you go to Comcast. Hey, add this for $10. Add this for $10. But it's not, if you put it all together, any cheaper than using the phone company in Comcast, for instance.
Right, but who's going?
But
to...
nobody does that.
Oh, now they've added security systems and IoT.
They're going to get my Comcast bills up to $200 a month now.
Oh, easily, yeah.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah,
but they've done that. They've slowly boiled that water. Apparently, this is Tim. So, if you say that the iPod or the iPhone was Steve Jobs' crowning jewel, services are Tim Cook's crown jewel. He began pushing, according to the Wall Street Journal, pushing services hard in late 2017. And he's been saying that Apple will double service revenue by 2020. According to the Journal, at monthly sessions, the 58-year-old CEO has peppered the team with detailed questions. He wanted services team members to tell him which apps were selling well, how many Apple Music subscribers stuck with the service, how many people were signing up for iCloud. iCloud, by the way, is not a competitive offering compared to Google Drive or Microsoft's OneDrive.
This is the problem. Okay, first, I stand by my, they need to compete in the enterprise if they actually want to make a lot of money on services. The second problem is, as Ed brought up, they are an ARPU company. They sell premium products at a premium price, and they always get the largest margin because their hardware is fantastic. When you go into the service industry, it is a commodity market, right, and you have to sell at scale, and they are not set up to do that.
iCloud is, there's no way it's going to be a replacement for OneDrive, right, or Google Drive. Or any other kind of
Dropbox,
drive,
yeah,
for that matter.
So they're not set up.
Yeah.
I mean, I get why they're doing it. They are
except
not set up for
if
this.
You have an iPhone, it's a no-brainer. You flick a switch and iCloud's in there. And then when you fill up the free 5 gigs, it starts saying you're running out of room. You haven't backed up in 3 months. It bugs you until you say, okay, I know because I'm paying $3 a month.
You sound like the Clinton Justice Department talking about Microsoft when you're talking this way.
It very much is like
isn't
that.
It like, yeah.
It's like bundling the browser, except there's much less justification for it.
I wonder why Apple has not been. I mean, there's been some rumblings about antitrust in Apple, but you never.
The
hear,
only person who's criticized Apple is Elizabeth Warren, and it was an afterthought after she said you should break up Google, Amazon, and Microsoft.
Right.
And, oh, yeah, Apple too. Yeah,
that
went
over well in Silicon
Everybody
Valley.
Loves Apple.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to break up Apple, and yet, if you're trapped in the Apple ecosystem, it is the worst kind of monopoly.
Oh, absolutely. And what's amazing too about some of my best friends are Apple users, and what they do is they live only in that ecosystem. It wouldn't occur to my Mac friends to buy anything other than an iPhone and to use anything other than they just cannot
it's just
escape.
Easy. It's a no-brainer.
Yeah,
and you know there are companies like Netflix and Spotify, both of whom have said we're not going to pay the Apple 30% anymore. We don't want to pay that anymore. Spotify's put out a website saying time to play fair, Apple. They've been taking pot shots back and forth.
And this
Apple
is my skepticism. So you know, for example, that Apple TV does not do as well as Roku, as one of many
it's
examples.
It's much more expensive.
It's much more expensive, and it's not as good. It's not as versatile. And the question is,
well, on the other hand, if you're locked into Apple's ecosystem, if you're in iTunes, it's the only device that plays iTunes.
Yeah.
So that's their leverage, right?
Yeah.
You're going to get that $200 out of somebody because, well, wait a minute, all my movies are in iTunes.
Right, if that's the world you're in. But I'm just saying, but when competing just standalone against Roku, they can't compete
either
in price or even quality.
Yeah.
And of course, there was some speculation about whether Apple Music would do well, and it has done well. There was a lot of concern that it wouldn't be able to compete with Spotify.
No, it's competed quite well.
Yeah, done well. So,
but as Spotify would say, they compete well because they charge us 30% extra, so we have to tack that on. So we cost $12.99 a month. Whereas Apple Music's only $9.99 a month on the iTunes store because there's no 30% VIG.
Yeah.
So that seems – you're right. It seems kind of anti-competitive. They're not a monopoly, so maybe that's not monopolistic behavior. They're only 50% of the market.
They're not competing against Microsoft or Amazon or Google for this. You know who they're competing against?
Who?
Amazon.
Well – I wish them.
Amazon has the closest walled garden to what Apple wants.
Amazon's terrifying.
It's
if you think Apple's bad, Amazon's
but
terrifying.
Amazon has figured out a way to get away from that 30%, right? They sideload some of the apps. At least I don't know if they still do. But
if you're looking at the Kindle app on iOS or the Audible app, which is also owned, you can't buy books or music.
Right. You can't buy the music that way. Yeah.
You have to go to your browser, buy it there.
Exactly.
And that's what Spotify's done, and that's what Netflix is doing now. Netflix says this is going to save us, what was it, $8 or $9 billion a year.
Yeah.
But not paying the Apple 30%.
Right. What's fascinating to me is that in this sense, Apple is, they're playing two roles. One is they're a payments processor. So they're sort of like MasterCard and Visa, although they have MasterCard and Visa as their partners as well. So they're layered on top of that. And they're also running some of the infrastructure for selling and servicing and updating the apps there. So those are two things that are of value to any provider. The real problem seems to be the arbitrary nature of the 30% fee and how it's 30% or nothing.
And on subscriptions, it goes down to this was a recent change down to 15% now after the second year.
And that's and that I think is to bring it back to what tomorrow's thing is going to be. This is yet another way for them to sort of ease off on the 30%, still make you know, still make significant revenue on it, but allow some of the other players to, you know, participate more fully.
Here's
in the
thing,
revenue stream.
I'm going to watch for tomorrow, and it will be a little side note, but it might be the most important thing Apple announces tomorrow. Apple is doing a credit card with Goldman Sachs, and I think that's the real play here, because it's one thing to sell music or rent storage space or offer TV shows. It's another thing entirely to take a cut of every transaction on the platform. Mm-hmm. And that's ultimately what Apple's going to do. In fact, Apple, Goldman Sachs, their partner in this, also has a bank, an online bank.
Right.
And I would not be at all surprised for Apple to do financial services. And at that point, that really is a walled garden. That is absolute lock-in.
I mean, it fits their business model. They've always been about owning the core technologies behind their products. Yeah. And if they are now a financial services company, it doesn't make sense for them to be paying that percentage.
Apple Pay,
else.
They get a smaller cut than they would as a credit card, right? They get a bigger cut. Of course, if you get Apple Pay plus the credit card, you get even more. I think that's the announcement to watch for tomorrow.
So that will make – I did an April Fool's story about Apple enters the health insurance business a number of years ago.
It's not an April Fool's. Amazon is doing it.
But the idea was that Apple would have iSurance, and the reason it would work is because the demographic of people who own Apple equipment are actually probably ones that you could sell the insurance to a little bit cheaper and still make money. But it was a joke. But now you're telling me it may not be a joke.
Yeah, and I'm not talking about Google did this, a branded credit card.
Yeah.
Somebody else was running the credit card. It's my understanding, and we'll see tomorrow, and maybe it won't become clear, but they will announce a credit card tomorrow, and I think it will not be a branded credit card, but it will actually be Apple Financial
and will
Services.
And you get Apple goodies in exchange?
Of course you will.
Yeah, you'll get something.
Set of points back, you get points towards an iPhone.
Play Store points.
Yeah. Right.
And it will be made out of titanium and unicorn's blood.
Oh, it'll be they'll definitely have a gold card.
Well, and of course you'll use it on the phone.
Gold or rose gold?
I want the Apple rose.
You actually
gold
ever use
card.
Your when you go to a grocery store? You go to Safeway.
I use Apple Pay all the time.
Yeah, I never use my credit cards anymore until they don't work at the rental.
I mean, Apple sold this as being faster. It's exactly the same as pulling out a credit card. You still enter the numbers.
Yeah, it's more fun.
Sometimes you have to sign. Like, I use the Apple Watch. What are you making me sign for?
Yeah.
This is not security. What is this? Yeah, it's fun. And, you know, at first I didn't use it because people gave you a funny look. The clerk would say, what? But now it's so accepted.
Right.
In fact, it's worse when I go to Whole Foods now. I have to open my phone up and show them the Amazon Prime QR code.
Right.
So they get credit there.
I use Google Pay. And what I like about Google Pay is you get an instant receipt. You know, Google will send you. I think Apple seem to as well.
I'm sure they'll.
So
I use this thing for payments. It's called
cash.
Euro.
Euro.
The
euro.
Euros.
Yes. Yeah. Actually, it's amazing how many things I have to do that I can't do electronically. They just don't.
God bless Italy. I'm serious. It barely works.
The only place my credit cards work in Rome are at the McDonald's.
Yeah.
Which. I mean, sometimes I want something other
you
than
you have
pasta.
A craving for a Big Mac?
I don't like the burgers, but I do like chicken nuggets every once in a while.
When we were in Japan, we went to a lovely bento restaurant. Each of us, Lisa, our 16-year-old, and I had a lovely bento box. They slowly pushed their bento box over to me. Ate all three of them, and then we went next door to McD's.
It's the only thing I can afford. Everything in Rome is so expensive.
Yeah.
I want sushi, but they have
But wait a
sushi.
Minute. Your restaurants are still cheaper than our restaurants.
This is true. This is true.
Yeah. You get a better Italian meal in Italy.
Yeah, we have
less.
Great coffee.
Yeah.
I'm keto now. I can't go to Italy. I'm actually not allowed.
Mm.
I can't even go.
Let you
border.
Off the plane.
No, sorry. You cannot go to Italy. It's not allowed. Our show today brought to you by Atlassian. Oh, we are an Atlassian house, and I'm proud to say those words. It all started for us with Atlassian's Jira, which is an agile development tool, and developers know it very well. But we use it for projects, so we always know who's working on what stage they're in, what resources they need, and it's so satisfying when you get to move that project into the completed column. There's just something that's great about that. It also works with Confluence, another Atlassian product. That's really important for us because we use Confluence to document what the team's doing. So we use it in IT. I think it's a great IT tool. I know it's a great IT tool. Between Jira and Confluence, we know what's going on, who's doing it. We know how they did it. We know what the workflow is. IT, it turns out, is empowering business these days. Not just a podcast network, but pretty much any business there is. Atlassian is a collaboration software company that empowers IT teams around the world. IT is at the center of almost everything going on. In a cloud-based world, it's IT teams that plan and execute, and they got to do it faster and better than ever. Incidents require open, agile, and smart cooperation between ops and software development teams. The expectations are high. The stakes are high. IT's right at the heart of that. You just, you know, if you're in a business-critical workflow, there, failure is not an option. But the great thing about Atlassian is it's not just for developers. They offer an affordable, reliable suite of tools for IT teams of all sizes, from DevOps to Agile to IT apps to Ops to ITSM and whatever's next. They give you the technology backbone you need to for planning, service, and supporting the kind of change that propels business. So I mentioned Jira. I mentioned Confluence. If you've got a code base, there's Bitbucket. If you've got Ops, there's Ops Genie and Status Page that help you better detect incidents, coordinate response efforts, resolve issues faster, keep customers or stakeholders updated. And I love it that Atlassian is always adding new tools. So they all work together. They all kind of, you know, they're jigsaw puzzle pieces that all fit together, things like Trello. And it all integrates seamlessly with Jira and Confluence. So your team can stay on one platform and get it all done. And most importantly, can keep stakeholders, customers, coworkers informed, up to date on what's going on. You want a high-performing IT team, you want Atlassian. Like all of Atlassian's products, the tools for your IT team are easy, they're free to try, and you got to go right now. There it is, all of it. Look at all this stuff. Atlassian.com/IT. Atlassian.com/IT. Find out what Atlassian offerings are right for your team. Try them all. You can try them for free and really put together a suite of tools that supports your IT team. Try Atlassian today to see what IT can be. Atlassian.com/IT. So I came in early on, was it Tuesday or Wednesday, to see the Google GDC announcement? It was Tuesday, 10 a.m. at the Game Developers Conference. We knew that Google was probably going to announce a streaming gaming service. They'd tried Project Stream. They'd showed people you could play Assassin's Creed Odyssey in a browser on a Chrome device, Chrome OS device. We thought that was pretty cool. They announced Stadia. Mm-hmm. And I have to admit, I bet this happens to you too. Maybe not Ed, because Ed is a hard-headed cynic. But when I watch these keynotes, I get all excited. Say, oh, this is going to be the greatest thing ever. They showed how YouTube will be the heart of this that you could stream gameplay on YouTube, and there'd be a button on there that said to the viewer, come on, play the game too. And you join the game at the same point. You'd be able to save game states and share them so that they could join the game right at the most critical part. They showed how you could play on devices as dumb as a Chromecast Ultra, a $75 dongle you plug into your TV, and suddenly you get the Google joystick, which, by the way, brilliantly worked just like Chromecast. It didn't connect to the dongle. It connected via Wi-Fi to the Stadia cloud. They showed how they would have backbones that had custom-designed AMD GPUs that were working at 10 teraflops faster than a PlayStation 4 Pro or an Xbox One X. I got so excited. I said, take my money, Google. And they said, well, no, we don't know what it's going to cost or when it's going to be available, so thank you very much.
And actually, breaking news, Google just announced that they're going to be killing Stadia in 2023. So, just FYI. You know,
it reminded me, I remember when Steve Perlman, who was the founder of Web TV, created On Live. I'm looking at an article, I guess it died around 2012.
Yeah.
But that was an early example. And I was blown away at the time because that was his pitch as well.
That's the irony of this. This is nothing new.
Nothing new at all. No.
Right. On Live failed because they realized that they had to have enough hardware for the peak times a day, but it would lie fallow almost all the rest of the time.
It's like the electrical grid.
Yeah, they couldn't afford it.
Yeah,
they sold their IP, I think, to Sony. Mm-hmm. Sony also bought Gaikai. Sony is going to have has a streaming gaming service. Microsoft has announced next year they'll do a streaming gaming service.
Shadow does this.
Shadow. That's pretty cool.
Steam does this. Steam to go. You can stream. Microsoft does this with their Xbox Anywhere. So it's not, like you said, not new.
Not new at all.
I think they really want to push the YouTube integration. That whole
it's almost to save YouTube. It's almost like Twitch is eating our lunch.
Twitch, yeah.
Although they were quick to point out how many billions of hours people watch gaming on YouTube. But it's different because I know I watch by our kid. He watches Minecraft videos, how-to videos. You know, if he wants to play Overwatch, he'll watch the videos and learn and then play the game. People watch Twitch to watch live action.
Right.
I think the name Stadia is also telling because it kind of implies a stadium, like an esports kind of thing.
It took me a long time to get my head around the idea that people would actually watch other people play games. Then it occurred to me, ESPN, sports. I mean, we've been doing that all our lives.
You know, when I turned to the corner is Fortnite because, first of all, Fortnite has a feature that if you get killed, which I did almost instantly every single time, you can continue to follow the guy who killed you and then the guy who kills him all the way up to the top. Mm-hmm. And it's fun. And then I watched, it was a charity thing with Ninja and Marshmello playing.
Oh, the concert?
Yeah. No, not the concert. He had a concert in Fortnite. That's another thing in time. But no, I watched them. It was at E3 last year. And it was really engaging and fun to watch. The commentators were good. Yeah. They have to work on the biggest problem they had is they don't know as much about this as ESPN does about sports because they would always miss the kill shot. Like they'd go there. I wish you could have seen that. But they'll get that down.
Yeah.
I thought it was very engaging. So I do think it's fun to watch.
Oh, yeah. It's a huge industry.
And it's obviously huge already.
People also watch people play poker. I mean,
poker's fun to
love
watch.
To watch other people play games.
You know why? The whole card camera. It's the single thing that made poker big on TV. Because you have information the other players don't have. You know what hand he's bitten.
But, I mean, it's not gaming per se. It's the same thing with poker or watching anything that's a sport that people don't care about. They're following the personality. It's the same reason why people watch Twit a lot. They love Leo. You know, it's when you find someone who you find
hate me,
interesting
but,
or hate but, exactly.
But you
follow them.
Yeah.
On YouTube, it's the same thing. I've watched now hundreds of hours of gaming on YouTube because I made a conscious effort.
Do you watch live gaming on YouTube?
I don't like the live gaming.
Do you watch it on Twitch?
I watch it on Twitch sometimes, but
and it's
YouTube
a community on Twitch because you got the chat,
right?
You got people giving money. Twitch, they've made it into something interesting, I think, very compelling. What do you think, Ed?
Well, you know, I find it fascinating that Google doesn't break out how much money it makes from YouTube.
They never do they?
No, they never have. And so you don't know. But and we're back to the thing we were talking about earlier, where Google is a company that has historically been driven completely by advertising revenue. And I think you're right on the money to say that this is an attempt to save YouTube, to transform YouTube, because right now YouTube's reputation is toxic.
Right.
But everything in YouTube's business model, which is similar to Facebook's business model, is driven by engagement and the things that make engagement go up are usually things that are shocking, violent, or controversial.
You mean having people make pornographic comments on children's videos is something that you would find distasteful?
For example. And we could find, we could find several worse examples than that, even.
That's pretty hard to find one worse than that.
And that's saying something.
Yeah.
So the idea of turning it into, I mean, it's almost like they're trying to turn it into, they've tried to turn YouTube into a TV network. For a while.
The difference is with TV networks, you actually have programmers. You actually have professionals who make editorial decisions for quality content. So the idea of mixing television and social networking is, imagine if NBC sort of turned over its airwaves one day and said, okay, anybody can program whatever they want.
Yeah, we have that. It's called reality TV.
We have a president who did well at that. Yeah,
and that's the thing. When I figured out that it was about engagement was when I saw streaming of a game called Rust, which is the most boring game ever, but I'm kind of addicted to it because of the fact that you had some very talented content creators who were turning it into a narrative.
Yeah.
And that's why I like YouTube. It's a bit more finished than
Good
Twitch.
Name for a boring game, Rust.
Rust. It really is. It really is.
You sound like an old school guy.
No.
Because you're saying, you're going to need a professional announcer.
Well, no, I'm not.
Welcome to the 21st century. The age of the amateur.
Leo, there's some amazing content on YouTube. And there are a lot of millionaires on YouTube who did very well exploiting that media better than most professional actors and producers and directors have done, doing professional media.
I mean, still the big bucks are in professionally produced television and,
right.
and movies.
But the point is that
but the kids today are watching the YouTube.
That's right.
In fact, I just saw a stat that there's more YouTube's easily, handily beating cable TV in people under 25. I can't remember the exact numbers, but it's not a competition anymore.
It's not even close.
Not even close. Right.
But I'd be curious to know. The one metric is how many people are watching it and how much time they're watching it. But the other metric that matters in terms of it being a sustainable business is how are they monetizing
Well, and I agree with you, Ed. I mean, the problem YouTube has reputationally is it's a dung heap.
Well, that was my point. Ed bringing up the issue of the reputation.
But it's not the quality of the video, as bad as that is.
Right.
It's the comments and the environment that's bad. And it's bad because advertisers are terrified of having an ad appear next to something
disgusting. Yeah.
Disgusting.
And the recommendation algorithm that leads you into, the darkest, worst.
That's a spectacular failure on Google's part.
Which is why some of the biggest YouTubers, the ones who are actually making money on this, are no longer really depending on the monetization through YouTube. They use Patreon.
Yeah, Lily Singh makes her money selling baskets of goods. And,
precisely. Because then you can just ignore the comments or even turn them off.
This is a study from Nielsen, their Q3 2018 total audience report. Mobile time, this is mobile, but I think mobile, as you know, is where all the growth is happening. 40% of all mobile traffic, 40% of all mobile traffic is YouTube.
That makes sense.
Let me say that again. 40%.
Is that measuring it in bytes, hours? What are they measuring in?
Time spent.
Time spent, okay.
And the other 10% is Netflix?
10% Facebook. 40% YouTube. So however we feel about YouTube, clearly it's got people's attention.
But isn't that the way – that's the way YouTube is designed. You watch a video and then boom, the next one is queued up and starts playing automatically. And then boom, the next one is queued up. And that's the secret of their success, which is – people spend a lot of time on it because you start out just watching a picture of, pets in Halloween costumes and pretty soon you're watching flat earth videos.
That's the real problem. Did you see that? Almost all the people who believe in the flat earth today got it from YouTube.
Yeah.
That's from a lot of I take it back. It is I'm gathering this is from Sandvine that it's data. Because global downstream mobile traffic by app. So that's YouTube of the total. By the way, YouTube, 37%. Web browsing, 4.6%. People don't even browse the web on this stuff. WhatsApp, 3.7%. App Store and Google Play, 2.1% and 1.9%.
WhatsApp is at 3.7%. What the heck are people transferring over WhatsApp?
No, that's because everywhere but the U.S., WhatsApp is the choice of messaging app. So they're spending all day on WhatsApp. Pictures. They're sending pictures. Instagram 5.7, Snapchat 8.3. But relative to YouTube. YouTube dominates. Yeah.
But what I don't understand about that is, let's say that I spend an hour staring at my phone screen as I talk with people on WhatsApp.
Yes.
And then I spend an hour watching one video after another on YouTube. I mean, those YouTube videos are significantly more data.
Yeah, maybe heavy. They're just running in the background while you're doing something else.
Well, no, I'm just saying that an hour of WhatsApp is going to use
it's much smaller,
much less. Okay.
So you're right. I'd rather see hour. Data. I would rather see time spent viewing than data.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right. Yeah. Sandvine gets the data.
You could make an app. You could make a living off of creating an app that just does curated content. You don't create any content of your own. You promise your viewers that they're only going to get content that's high quality.
You think so? Because we've been saying that for years, that curation was the real skill.
No one's really done it. I mean, we have playlists. But, I mean, to actually make a concentrated effort to say, look, you rent our service, it runs on your Roku stick, and you will only get YouTube videos that actually make sense for you.
Yeah. So Stadia will come out sometime this year for a price unknown. As Karsten's son, a serious gamer, pointed out, who announces? Okay, some flaws, some major flaws in the announcement. First of all, Satya Nadella comes out and says, I am not a gamer. Okay, who does a game announcement at GDC starting, I'm not a gamer? That's bad. Two, literally, the only game they announced on it is Doom, which is 30 years old. There's an updated Doom.
Assume they're going to get Duke Nukem.
Which is yeah, exactly.
Are you suggesting that it's doomed?
Exactly. I don't know. It's just that, come on, without games, there's no point in playing a gaming service, and they had no games to announce.
Right.
They had no price.
And look at what Apple does in announcement. They half the announcement of their developers standing up there showing off the cool things you can do with their product. They always announce the price.
Right.
They always announce the date of availability.
This was a little premature. Of course, it's at a game developers conference, so they're trying to get developers to write games for it. Although, if I'm a developer and Google comes to me and says, we got a new service, are you going to write for Google knowing that they could kill the service 2 years later? Who trusts Google for that? I don't think it was a compelling pitch.
And didn't Microsoft say that? Yeah, didn't Microsoft say they're going to have their response to this at E3?
Yes.
Which is just a little over 2 months away.
Yeah.
And that will undoubtedly be before the widespread availability of Google Stadia. Yeah. So it's a vaporware announcement, really.
The ultimate.
Classic.
And then the final point of all this, which I actually find really interesting, Variety brings this up. You could talk about how great your servers are, how you're going to have all sorts of horsepower. There was a lot of cool things like if you got in a very involved co-op game, each player could have their own hardware instance or even multiple hardware instances per player. All of that's great, but it's still got to come down this crappy frayed wire that's provided by Comcast or Verizon or AT&T or Cox or Frontier. And ultimately, as Variety points out, this is just ripe for exploitation. Without a net neutrality rule, it's just a matter of time before Comcast says, you know, if you'd like to play those games on Google, it'll cost you $1.50 a month.
Well, because they're latency dependent, and you can destroy a game experience by adding another 10 milliseconds of latency.
We would like to give you the best possible gaming experience, and for that, it'll be $5 a month. Mm-hmm. And if you don't think that Comcast is capable of doing that, then just look at Comcast Flex. Xfinity Flex is the latest rent-taking scheme from Comcast. For $5 a month, you can get a Netflix streaming box on your Comcast. But you have to have a high-end Comcast X1 system.
Right.
It's a really nice stream you got there. It would be a shame if something would have happened to it.
But this is a good example, like what Ed was talking about, where you just go, whatever, fine, another $5. Okay, I'll take it.
But you can buy a Roku for $25 and own it?
But here's the thing. If something goes wrong with your Roku, you call Comcast and they say, that's a problem with your hardware. You call Roku and they say, well, we think it might be a problem with your network, and you can't ever get those two people talking to another.
Good point.
Whereas if you buy it all from one place, you call one support line, and they're going to own the problem. Now,
because if you call Comcast and you say there's something wrong with it, we upgraded that router. You can buy the new one for $85, or you can rent it for an additional $4 a month.
It's literally the worst part of my to-do list. It ends up staying on that to-do list for months. Call Comcast about... It's the thing, isn't it, that you put off the longest?
Yeah.
The last thing. I'd rather have a tooth pulled.
They are responsible for it, yes.
At least there's somebody.
But it's the same reason why, when you were saying earlier, Larry, that, why would someone buy this Apple product when the Roku one is superior? Well, guess what? If I just get if I'm a loyal Apple user, I'm not super price conscious, and I know that I can get it all from one place, and if something goes wrong, I either call Apple support or I take it into the Genius Bar.
That's true.
And that's why bundling has been a successful business model for years, because as soon as you start
a key benefit of our platform.
I'm sorry. So
I just call Ed Bott if I have a technical problem.
Zach has edited together. Zach is Carson's son. How old is he? 14?
He is 14, yes.
He's made a video, YouTube video. He's an up-and-coming YouTube star in which he cut together key announcements from the Stadia announcement. Are his reactions in here?
He doesn't do reaction videos. He just makes memes. So
this is a meme?
A quick little meme.
A key benefit of our platform is that a single creative vision and a single code base can now be enjoyed instantly across any screen.
At support being able to play games across desktop.
Okay, he's not doing this. I want to point out that everybody who watched this video about Google's amazing new streaming gaming service saw two things. First, the camera guy's butt inching into the screen. Second, the stream broke up.
Right.
It broke up, and it didn't do it just once. Several times. This is going to be a lot of fun playing this video game, let me tell you, kids.
Oh.
Nice job, Zach. And now we're playing Google's most popular video game, the dinosaur game that you get when their internet is dead.
Busted. Yeah. You know, it's funny. Whenever I hear a guy with a British accent doing a tech announcement, I think of Johnny Ive.
Yeah. This is the thinnest gaming service we've ever made.
Exactly.
Sir Johnny really should do more on the Apple thing. I think he's on sabbatical, or he's just,
I think he's just over it.
He's just done.
Yeah.
Goodbye.
But it is true that every iPhone announced is always the best iPhone they've ever announced.
Yeah.
Otherwise, well, why would they be announcing it?
This one's not as good as the last one.
I love the announcement.
My last year's is better.
This one's okay.
We tried, but we just couldn't improve last year's. So will Johnny Ive be on stage tomorrow? No.
No, not tomorrow.
Will celebrities be on stage tomorrow? Yes.
Yeah, probably a couple of influencers.
Oprah?
Oprah?
Oprah's got a deal with Apple? Yeah.
Will I be there tomorrow? No.
You're not invited or not going?
No, I don't want to go.
Invited but not going?
Yeah. I'll usually take your invitation.
Jeez.
If you give your invitation to Leo, he'll hold up an iPad during the...
Shut up.
Non-transferable.
Shut up.
Well, you know, I was on Apple's... I was like banned from Apple for years, but some reason I'm back in their good graces. I have no idea why.
Gizmodo was banned because they bought a stolen iPhone, took it apart, and the police had to be called. They're even back.
They're back.
You do one stream of Steve Jobs introducing the iPad, and that's it forever.
I think you're in the grandfather part of the ban list.
Oh, I don't really care. Honestly, we'll be here tomorrow morning watching Apple stream, talking about it, commentating on about it. It's me, Megan Maroney. Anybody else joining us, Carson? Just the two of us?
Just the two of you, yeah.
Okay. I'll watch you.
It'll be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Well, the last time we did this, part of the fun, the last time we did this, Apple issued a takedown and took our YouTube Live channel off for 2 weeks. So that'll be part of the fun.
Missed that. Wait, what?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think they banned. You're not allowed to broadcast any portion of their...
Well, I'm sorry, but I am. It's called Fair Use. It's commentary of a news event, right? Do we broadcast press conferences? It's a press conference. Excuse me. Mm-hmm.
And did they add any value to the broadcast? Yes, they did. It was commentary.
They weren't charging for it.
They do have more press conferences than the Trump administration does.
They do. Far more. Far more. No, we'll be doing it. We'll be streaming it. And we'll be inviting takedowns. And I'll give you my address and you can write to me. Our show today, bro. Before we do the ad, do we have a best of video?
We sure do.
Because sometimes I know that you get busy, you have a busy life, you don't get to watch all the Twitch shows you'd really like to watch. So what we do is we take some of the best moments from this week and we put them together so you can see what you missed this week on Twitch.
Previously on Twitch.
Meditation is all about spending time with yourself. One could very easily drop down onto the floor or into a chair, close their eyes, and drift off into bliss. Or they could pitch in on Eric Antonow's Kickstarter project called Silent Meditation on Vinyl. For $20, you too could have received your very own 12-inch copy of Silent Meditation. 20 minutes
per
side.
It's a silent record.
Silence.
Reason. Twit live specials.
Our vision is to stadium.
You can buy it.
One place for all the ways we play.
It's literally silent. By any means.
YouTube.
Silent. There's nothing.
You discover the latest Assassin's Creed Odyssey trailer on Ubisoft's official channel on YouTube. You will notice the play now button.
Right there in YouTube.
Holy cow.
In YouTube.
5 seconds. 5 second launch. That's so cool.
That's a pretty compelling.
See how excited I was.
Lies.
About Android.
Friends at 9 to 5 Google, they've got some deets on the Pixel 3a.
From now on, I'm calling the 3a XL the Pixel 3 Axel.
And every time it rings, the ringtone is November Rain.
It's just Axl Rose going,
just sock out of the box to the cold November rain.
I want my Twit TV.
Oh my God, Jim Cutler.
Wait, you have to explain this record to me. It is actual silence on a record.
And isn't there a side B? I think there's a second side, which is also silent.
And why would somebody want this?
For meditating?
What?
Believe it or not, it was Andy Anako's pick of the week on Mac Break Weekly.
So it's like white noise? Or
No. It's some clicks and pops. Maybe there's some clicks and pops if you don't take good care of your vinyl. It's on Kickstarter. It's, let's see, what is it?
So it simulates having tinnitus.
$15.
So you can meditate.
But what's great is they've raised, of the $600 goal, this guy was really not very confident.
Oh my goodness.
They've raised
$5,954.
I just don't get it.
I
mean, I understand white noise, but.
I mean, I'm in the meditation business.
That's right.
Silent prayer.
This record has not one, but two silent meditations, each side 20 minutes. Of utter silence. No narration, no sound.
So will there be a CD version so I can have the silence and more clarity?
Better yet, it's on a 140-gram vinyl.
Send me $10, I will instruct you how to go into a room.
Close the door.
Close the door. Turn off your devices.
All right. That's definitely a first world
problem. It's Kickstarter is what it is. It's just
unbelievable.
And it still wild. Will probably not be delivered.
Yeah, right. Oh, we were having some trouble.
You've got a horrible record, right?
Oh, man. I stopped. I had to stop buying stuff on Kickstarter.
Oh.
I think the final thing was the floating bonsai tree, which really, I mean, honestly, looked really cool. So it had a big base with like a heavy magnet in it, and then there was this pumice rock with a metal plate in it, and it would hover, and then there was a cute little bonsai tree growing out of it. So it was like it was really cool, except when I got it, bonsai not included. And when you put if you bought a bonsai tree, put it in there, then you would have to shave the rock so it'd be balanced. Otherwise, it would just go boom. So it was just too much work.
This is the modern version of those late night television commercials on really crappy cable channels.
But at least that stuff came. I mean, I bought a lot of stuff that never even came.
Is that Freedom Rock?
Do you want fine, fresh, fierce, interactive LED lashes? I have a pair of them.
I
spent $40
about
on them
the other day.
Of course, you could put down $2,500 on a Model Y.
The sad thing about this one, yeah, I could, and probably will. Eventually. The sad thing about this one is, I put my money down on this, and within a day of this going up on Kickstarter, there were Chinese knockoffs being sold for half the price.
Of course. Well, where were they going to have them manufactured in the first place?
Yeah, exactly. What else? I'm just looking because you're right. You reminded me. Oh, yeah. This is all depressing. This came. I ordered this luggage in
aluminum
in 2017.
So what made it smart,
It just
Leo?
Came. Well, it turns out it wasn't so smart. It has a battery built in, but I can't check this luggage because it has a battery built in.
Oh, right.
The regulations changed between the time they offered it and the time I bought it. We'll be back with more in just a bit, but first a word from, I love this, DigitalOcean. I know, Father Robert, you're a DigitalOcean fan too. You use it, as I do, because we're amateurs for prototyping web apps, websites, but it's also used by startups of all sizes for a minimum viable product. I see people running production servers on it all the time. DigitalOcean is the simplest, easiest to use cloud platform for developers, for teams. You can deploy, manage, and scale cloud applications faster and more efficiently with DigitalOcean. And I'm going to show you. I have to think back in time. Let me log in here to when I was first starting out in this business and I wanted to create a Twit website. First, I had to find a web host. I went down to SoftLayer in Texas. They're now IBM, but and then you say, well, I'd like a server. Yes, sir. What kind of server would you like? And you have to specify it. And then they say, okay, we're going to provision that server. We'll get back to you in a week or two. And by the way, at this time, this was pretty cool. Oh, cool. All right. A week or two later, then you have to install all the software that you're going to use on that server. Maybe if there's a problem, another week passes, you finally get it up and running. And now you've got your website going. Or you could do what I would do today. And go to do.co/twit, DigitalOcean. Let me just show you. I'm going to log into my DigitalOcean account. They call them droplets because, get it, it's a drop in the ocean. And I'm going to show you how fast it is to set up and provision a server. I'm going to create a new droplet. By the way, I'm not going to use, there's so many cool features. They've got Kubernetes. They've got additional volumes. You can have databases. They have custom DNS. We'll start here. You could choose an image. Which distribution you want? Ubuntu, FreeBSD, Fedora, Debian, CentOS. You could choose a container distribution. They support Docker and Kubernetes. Or I like the one button installs. This is, they call it now, the marketplace. Everything from WordPress to Django, Docker, Ghost. That's a blogging platform. Let's just set up, I don't know, what should we set up today, Father Robert? You want to set up just a plain old lamp stack?
Yeah.
I like, you know what I like to do? Because I like to have Node.js installed as well. So it'll be a lamp stack, but it'll have Node pre-installed on Ubuntu 18.04. So I'm ready to run my Node application. I can have a standard starter or general purpose or CPU optimized. But let me watch this. I like to turn down the price all the way to $5 a month. That's a gigabyte, a CPU, 25 gigs of storage, gigabyte of RAM, 25 gigs of storage, a terabyte of transfer, this per month. I do like to spend an extra buck to have backups enabled in case I screw anything up. If you want to add block storage, you can. You choose your data center, New York, San Francisco, Amsterdam, Singapore, London, Frankfurt, Toronto, Bangalore. I always choose San Francisco. I also, as you know, Robert, this is very handy to have SSH turned on so that you can have secure SSH login. There you go. Let's just call this Leo's, we'll call it Padre's node.
Because
this one's for you. And I'm going to, now watch. Less than a minute, I'm going to set up and provision a server with a public IP address that I'll have a console to, I can log into. It's running a lamp stack. It's running node.js. It's all ready for my application. I can start uploading it, could start working. I can serve it publicly. They have many more features, including custom DNS, load balancers. They have secure droplets, droplet metrics. This is, I've never seen anything so easy. This is transforming the economics of web apps, of web startup. It's incredible. MySQL, Ruby on Rails. They just introduced managed databases for Postgres, so you can launch your database with the push of a button. Oh, by the way, Padre's node is up and ready. Should we that fast? Should we just log in?
Yes, please.
We'll just log into your node. I get root access. It's got a public IP address. There it is. It's booting up. Systemd. There it is. We're logged in. Well, actually, we're not, because I'm not going to show you Padre's secret password. It's amazing. 9999 uptime. You get an SLA, cloud firewalls, full DNS management, free daily backups with point-in-time recovery, standby nodes with automatic failover, end-to-end security. So if you've got a Raspberry Pi and you need a web-based back-end service for it, this is the place to do it. It's so affordable, so easy, and we're going to give you $100 credit right now at do.co/twit. So it's going to be free for you for at least a little while. do.co/twit. I love DigitalOcean. The sky's the limit. Anything you want to do, Padre, I'll just turn off. Oh, I should show you this part too. And when you're done, you destroy the droplet. Aww. I'm destroying your droplet. Just destroy it. It's all gone. Goodbye, droplet. Aww. Completely securely erased. I love it. There you go. Boom. Gone. I should destroy that other droplet. I don't know what that's just hanging around. By the way, you see my bill in the upper right-hand corner? This month, $3.94. It's less than a latte, folks. do.co/twit. And when you apply that $100 credit, it's free. Thank you, DigitalOcean. Transforming technology. Transforming the ecosystem. That's just marvelous. We mentioned that Allo and Google Plus are gone April 2nd. I didn't mention that the Google URL shortener, goog.gl, is going away as well. Goog.gl.
I worry about Google Voice because that's my phone number.
I feel like it's hanging on by a thread.
I will be unreachable if that goes away.
My Google Voice number is the number on my business card, the number I give out. It's everywhere.
I've had to start shifting off of some of my second factor that's using that. Just in case.
Well, I'm sure, I mean, if they kill it, they'll give you a warning and you could move it to Twilio or somewhere else. Right. But
you can port it anywhere, actually.
Yeah, you could port it. So you could put it on a phone if you wanted.
Right, but I have it ringing multiple phones. And what I love about it when I review a phone, I get a new phone, I immediately make it my Google Plus number, and then I can go and use it.
Yep.
That's how I call from Italy.
I bet.
I use Hangouts.
It's cheap, right? Yeah.
No, it doesn't cost anything.
Free, yeah.
Free. Wow.
But you have to speak Italian.
I do wonder how long Hangouts has to live as well. Robert, what would you use as an alternative to Google Voice? I know there are a lot of companies that do this. None for free, probably. Yeah. But
right. I mean, you could. I think we can safely get away from the old idea of it has to be a phone number. You know,
In a way, I like that. And actually, if you use Signal or WhatsApp, it's tied to your phone number.
I've been getting into Discord. I know it's a gaming service.
I actually love Discord.
But I've got a couple of Discord services that I run right now because I've got one for family and friends, and I've got one that basically the old know-how Google Plus group has come into my Discord.
Nice.
So we talk about maker projects.
Is it like our chat room, like an IRC room?
Oh, yeah, yeah. But you have different channels. Just like we've got different channels in our chat room. And so you choose the one that is speaking about the topic that you want. We go back and forth. And so that's my touchstone to the Twit Army.
Do you run the server at home? Do you run it on DigitalOcean?
Discord runs it for me.
Oh, you just let them run it?
Yeah.
Do you pay for that?
Nope.
What?
Nope. Completely free. 100%.
It's not end-to-end encrypted, but who cares?
It can messaging. Be. You can turn that on. Yeah. So in the private chat rooms, because they allow you to make text rooms and then they also allow you to make voice rooms. And you can turn on and off encryption depending on what kind of performance you need. And it's got apps for iOS, for Android, for Windows.
I think in the modern world, there's a real call for some sort of decentralized would be better, but some sort of authentication service where this is my one, you know, whatever it is, at Leo Laporte or whatever, but this is my one single place where you can find everything, and this is me, and it's authenticated to be me. Maybe you use GPG signing. I do that.
Blockchain.
Yeah. Well, actually, that's a good use for blockchain.
It would reach you in whatever preferred mode you want to be reached.
Well, and I use...
And you're impossible to reach.
Leo.ist
use. How do you email this guy?
Which is...
I don't.
Leoist pulls up my Keybase public page, which has all my information, all my links, my phone numbers, how to reach me via Signal, what my PGP key is. So that's one page that refers to everything. And it's through Keybase, which I think is a really great service, but not widely known.
Mm-hmm.
Ed, do you have a centralized thing you use?
No, I don't.
I feel like we need that. And Google Voice was for many of us.
Yeah. But, you know, email is becoming unwieldy for many people because it's the sheer quantity of it. Texting is annoying. I hate it when PR people text me in the middle of the night to tell me about their products, and I'm getting more of that. But there needs to be a way in which the recipient can somehow control the flow of information to yourself. That's still convenient for people.
And that's why Google Plus was so awesome.
And then
you really could control that.
You know, which messaging service are you using? Are you using?
Do you think that's a killer app? Somebody will say, and put it out, and everybody will go, oh, that's what we need all along.
Well, the problem with all of those things is that they require large companies that have entrenched business models to agree on a common standard that they don't control. And historically, every time we've tried to do something like that, someone sabotages it.
Well, we did it with email and we did it with text messaging.
Email is the single real success. Text messaging, I'm not sure I agree with you because it's gotten very fragmented. And now Google wants RCS to take over from SMS, but the carriers don't want to do RCS. So it's actually starting to fragment. But email has
survived. Let's not even talk about iMessage.
Yeah. Apple's a complete silo.
Well, all the messaging services, right.
Yeah.
Right. And even email, you know, it just happened to be around at the beginning of everything. But, you know, the getting protocols to sync properly on different devices, you know, the Google Gmail, you know, they dumb it down for use on other platforms, but you know, so that they're using the bare bones internet standards, but in a rational cooperative world, the email standards would have grown the you know, the baseline would have been much more than POP and SMTP.
But Ed, and IMAP. I'm showing my age, but I think that you and Lou and Leo will remember when, if you were an AOL subscriber, you couldn't send a message to a CompuServe subscriber.
MCI mail.
Yeah, MCI with 55 cents a message on MCI, but you could then with a big deal when MCI and CompuServe finally had interconnectivity.
They federated, and that was the. And there are, you know, there's Mastodon, there's GNU Social, which is what Mastodon's based on. There's PixelFed, which is a GNU Social-based Instagram. But you're right, Ed, without the big commercial entities supporting it, which they never will because they want to silo everything, it's going to be pretty hard. And consumers, this is why consumers buy the Comcast Flexbox or Apple services. They want to make it easy.
I stick with AOL Instant Messenger for all my communications.
Good thinking.
Your pain is their business model.
Yeah, yeah. I like it.
They finally killed AIM, right?
I think you can't use AIM anymore. That's why you're not getting any messages.
That's why nobody contacts.
It's been really quiet.
I thought I was unpopular.
They killed the AIM server. So then there's Facebook. Oh, boy. We stored hundreds of millions of your passwords in plain text.
Yeah.
Oh, what could go wrong?
Oh, what could possibly go wrong? It turned out, as part of a routine security review in January, we found some user passwords being stored in a readable format within our internal data storage systems. This caught our attention because basically 20,000 Facebook employees would have access to your passwords. Facebook says they will notify you if your passwords are stored in that way. The number of people whose passwords are stored that way seems to be going up, as always. Facebook says it's at least hundreds of millions of Facebook Lite users, tens of millions of other Facebook users, tens of thousands of Instagram users.
I think this is all part of a brilliant strategy because they've done so much shady stuff over the last couple of years that this doesn't even tick the meter. This is just sort of like,
Yeah, big deal. What could possibly go wrong? At least it was, as far as we know, only available to Facebook employees.
Yeah, but they have thousands of employees.
And they have these things called email and USB drives. So, yay.
And hackable systems. Yeah. Other than that, it was perfect.
Normally, says Facebook, we hash and salt the passwords.
Normally. I pepper mine, actually.
Yeah.
That text file did not like caches, so, you know.
If you had a parody account on Twitter that was making fun of you and embarrassing and humiliating you, what would be the best way to shut it down?
I think you should file a lawsuit.
Yeah. So, at Devin Cow, which was Devin Nunes's former chairman of the security House Security Committee and now ranking member. It only had 1,200 followers on Monday. He sued them and Twitter for $250 million. It now has more than 500,000 members, surpassing Nunes' own account.
634,000 as of right now.
So,
by the way, they've got the special counsel news up on their page.
We're gonna rename the Streisand effect to the Nunes Cow effect because that lawsuit had the exact opposite effect. He also sued a parody Twitter account, Devin's mom,
right?
Which, by the way, I think it would be a House of Cardsian twist if it turns out that's actually Devin's mom. That would be incredible.
Devin's cow is hopping on the monetization bandwagon.
Oh, yeah. Big time.
With T-shirts. Mm-hmm. Conspiracy meeting tonight. Don't tell Devin. Mere $19.95.
Well, the crazy part of this is they pulled up. He doesn't understand how the internet keeps everything. So they found that video from 2010 where he quotes, "I think people have every right to say what they want to. If they want to smear someone, they can do it." So that was him in 2010 versus him now saying, but being mean.
Well, so it's easy for us to poke fun at Devin Nunes for doing something that was transparently stupid. But there is a dark side to this.
Oh, God, yes.
There's at least three people that are sued here. Liz Mayer is the named person in it. And then the other two people, whoever is running those accounts, those three people are going to have to pay for legal representation. They're going to have to spend a lot of time and a lot of money defending themselves here. He filed the suit weirdly in Virginia. And one reason for that is that Virginia has really terrible, weak, right, anti-SLAPP laws. Mm-hmm. So you can't, SLAPP, you know, anti-SLAPP laws punish people for bringing frivolous lawsuits. Yeah. But usually can wind up turning the table so that you get your legal expenses paid and you might even get a judgment out of it. But they found a jurisdiction to file it in where those laws are really weak. It's part of a trend that's been going on from that side of the aisle. Weaken libel laws, make it easier to harass people for exercising their free speech rights. And I think, you know, that's the real story here, is that a powerful member of Congress is taking advantage of the court system to harass at least one American citizen and probably three, although we don't know who the cow and the mom are at this point yet.
Does Twitter have to reveal the identities of those account holders
in discovery?
I've never been able to get that information out of Twitter ever. Mm-hmm. Maybe I need to sue.
You know, well, if you file a lawsuit, then yes, you would subpoena the information from Twitter, and then Twitter would fight the subpoena, and it would, you know, the judge would have to order they would have to compel that response.
Right.
But it's literally chilling.
No, but it's also created a lot of great problems, like, you know, move on and don't utter a word. the fact is that Nunes actually comes from, there are actually 200, I looked it up because I wrote my Mercury News column is about this today. There are 200 dairy farms in Nunes' district. So my thinking is, why doesn't he actually focus on real cows and, you know, help them, dairy farmers?
His family owns a dairy farm in the Midwest.
I think it's
in Iowa. And they were raided by ICE last year. It was a very, very large, and nobody in the town would talk about the Nunes family at all because they were afraid.
And I have to say, I'm somewhat sympathetic because Twitter is a great place if you want to harass somebody.
Yes. Yeah.
It's very toxic.
I've been harassed.
Who hasn't been harassed? I think of Robin Williams' daughter,
who was,
after her father's death, horrifically harassed and had to leave Twitter. She didn't sue, but honestly, Twitter
is... Look at Cindy and Meghan McCain. You heard the story about Cindy McCain and Messenger, that message that she got this week?
No, what happened?
Oh, somebody sent her an absolutely disgusting message, which I wouldn't even repeat.
On Twitter or?
On Messenger, Facebook Messenger.
Don't put it on the screen.
Yeah. No, you don't want it on the screen. It's disgusting. But among other things, it threatened her daughter, Megan, made fun of her weight. And it was just...
All because she was defending her father.
For defending her father.
You know, from another person on...
Yeah, a guy named Donald Trump.
I'm not a fan of Twitter, I have to say. And every time I say this, there's plenty of journalists who will stand up and say, no, but it's a really great source. Yep. At the same time, I honestly think it's a bad source for our media because a lot of Twitter outrage gets amplified further by mainstream media, which says, oh, they're going crazy right now. And it's just Twitter outrage, which has no weight in my mind at all.
My problem with Twitter is that even now that it's 280 characters, it's still not enough to make a nuanced statement about anything serious.
The words nuance and Twitter seem an oxymoron.
And I've actually gotten in trouble trying to tweet things out that were complicated and people misunderstood.
Just don't tweet. Elon, don't tweet.
Elon.
Donald, don't tweet.
There's only one good way to use Twitter, and that is to put your statements out there and then ignore them.
Don't get in a conversation.
Don't get into it.
Oh, Donald Trump Jr. just tweeted a minute ago.
Oh, there you go.
Let's be precise. 19 Hillary-supporting leftist lawyers whose dream it would be to take him down. What?
The
other way to survive Twitter is you be very literal with your muting. My block bot does all my blocking, but I will mute people.
Why am I following Donald Trump
Jr.? It seems like we do too much. Well, probably it's a retweet, and that's the other problem. I use TweetDeck. I see you're using TweetDeck.
Yeah.
One of the real reasons I use TweetDeck, and I'm sure Jack will kill it any day now, is I can say in that column, no retweets. And retweets are the single worst pollutant in any Twitter stream because the retweets are the Twitter outrage engine revving up, and I just don't do retweets. Why are we even spending any energy on it? Mm-hmm. Good luck, Devin Cow.
Yep.
What was it? Facebook is where you go to listen to things you don't care about from people who you do care about. Twitter is where you go to listen about things that you do care about from people you care nothing about.
I think that's fair.
Yeah, that's about fair.
Instagram is the new home for hate, The Atlantic says.
Yay.
Yay. We thought it was just pictures. Misinformation apparently is thriving on Instagram. Now, I don't know how this works because at least with Instagram, there isn't retweeting. You have to follow people on Instagram or you're not going to see this stuff, right? Or is that not the case? How would Instagram, my wife uses it. I stopped using it, so I'm not an expert, but my wife uses it, but she makes it a private account. So only people who she knows can follow her pictures.
Right.
She only follows other people she knows and she likes it. And I don't blame her for liking it because it's only stuff she lets
in. By default, an Instagram account is public. You can make it private, which was smart for your wife to do
that.
We recommend at Connect Safely, we recommend that teens always have private accounts unless they happen to be public figures like the daughter of an
actress. One problem, though, is the same problem with YouTube. It's the recommendation engine.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And here's a motherboard piece by Joseph Cox. It took 10 seconds for Instagram to push me into an anti-vax rabbit hole with their recommendation engine. So there's part of the problem. These recommendation engines are just notoriously horrific. They just don't work. They amplify the wrong things because they're designed to generate engagement. They're designed to do what's good for the company, but maybe not so good for your mental.
Well, it's one of my biggest concerns about online news too. The fact that we are fed a diet of things that the source thinks that we want to consume as opposed to what actually is important.
Yeah. Well, the 24-hour news cycle has not been good for our polity, that's for sure.
Well, I had a turn. It's funny, on the way over here, I was listening to MSNBC in my car, on my car, and I had to turn it off. At certain points, it just gets infuriating. Put on some music.
On the other hand, you can go too far. In Australia, Telstra, the big telco, blocked 4chan, 8chan, and Vote, the blog Zero Hedge, and a video hosting platform, LiveLeak, because they were repeating the video of the Christchurch terrorist attack or rebroadcasting his manifesto or even just information. So Telstra, which is an ISP, blocked it. And that strikes me as
blocked the entire service.
Blocked the entire service.
Offending.
Now, that's the way New Zealand law works.
This is Australia, but is that how Australia law works?
Australia has tighter laws.
I think Australia does too, right? Yeah.
They have no First Amendment.
Right.
Yep.
I mean, I get it. I tend to fall more on the side of, say, libertarian, where I get, look, just put everything out there and give people the tools that they need to cut things down on their own. But as I get older, I realize that doesn't always work.
Yeah.
So there's got to be some sort of happy medium that is constantly shifting between blocking out content that is definitely 100% designed to provoke and incite and allowing brisk discourse.
So Microsoft, a number of years ago, created some technology called PhotoDNA, which they gave to the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, whose board I just recently retired from. And that technology allows them to basically hash specific illegal child exploitation images so that they can't be reposted. If Facebook could act quickly enough, for example, not just Facebook, all of these services, for example, and hash that video.
They do.
Well,
they had it hashed within 20 minutes. But the trouble is that the people who amplify it are aware of how the hashing works.
Yeah.
And so they ways to
you mutate the video.
They subtly alter the video. They'll do hold up an iPad to your screen and take a picture of it or do a video of it and then post that. For every way that you have to block it, the people who are determined to go around the blocks are going to do that.
Well, with PhotoDNA, at least for still images, you can pretty much defeat that getting around it because they don't just hash the actual file. They hash characteristics of the file that can be blocked even if the file has been modified.
And they've done some things with it using audio, for example, to fingerprint.
Isn't that how Facebook first blocked that video? They used audio rather than video to block.
Yeah, audio can be blocked. I mean,
we know it's challenging. And, you know, some people have called for the end of Facebook Live and other live streaming things. I don't think that's the solution.
I love Facebook.
I think live streaming is, I mean, we're doing it right now. I think it's really great.
But there was, you know, there was a quote when Facebook Live was introduced. Mark Zuckerberg in the at the launch of it said, this is, I think I'm going to have this quote right. He said, you know, this is going to be, you know, something like a game changer. But the thing he said, we really see this being a way for people to communicate things that are raw and visceral. Use those words.
He nailed it.
And nailed it. And so, you know, anybody who wasn't economically incentivized, who heard that should have gone, whoa, wait just a second. Let's just take the logical steps. Let's follow the recommendation engine and see where this takes us.
You could have predicted it.
Oh, yeah. No, it was predicted. I mean, people talked about that day one when it came out. There was concern. You know,
should Facebook shut it down? Is it a bad
No, I don't think they should shut it down. I think that there's a lot of legitimate uses of it, but there needs to be a better – I mean, they've got to get the AI working. They've got to figure out a way to successfully at least flag inappropriate or suspicious content and then have moderators immediately look at it and immediately respond. And, I mean, they could have done a better job than waiting for the New Zealand police to call them 17 minutes later to take
that
down.
Is that what happened?
Yeah, that's what happened. You know, on the other hand, and this is no defense of what happened on Facebook, but the real story here is that 50 people died. I mean, that's the story. More than the fact that a disgusting video got seen. Not to say that the video wasn't horrible and part of the propaganda that this guy was using. But so
and triggers the next generation.
Well, that's, that's my problem. It glorifies it. It becomes a way of creating new killers. Yeah. That's very sad.
I'm going to say something that's going to sound incredibly callous, and just know that that's not my intention. My intention is to put this in the proper frame. That was content. It was despicable content, but it was content. And it did what everyone wants their content to do, which is to spark emotion and therefore gather heat on the internet.
So no surprise it got reshared.
So it's no surprise it got reshared.
Yeah.
I in no way, shape, or form think that that's the kind of content that should drive the internet, but it does. So until you can solve for that,
no algorithm
and no AI is going
to
fix it.
Humans want that. We want to see that. It's the car wreck.
Don't you work for an organization that considers certain content to be sinful?
Absolutely. And that's why I'm saying, but this, until we come to a point at which we can say,
it's sinful content.
It's sinful
content. But we love it.
Yeah.
We love it. Otherwise, would there be Kardashians? I think not.
Have to ask the Pope.
I have still never watched.
Does the Pope have an opinion on that? I have never seen the Kardashians.
I don't even know what they look like. One of them's married to Kanye West.
I just know we can thank the Kardashians for the fact that people walk around town talking into their phone like this.
Wait, really?
With a speaker on.
Oh, that's they did that?
Yes. You know why? Because it was reality TV and they needed the camera to hear the other end of the conversation. So they put the person on speakerphone and talked to it. But somehow it became the right way to use a smartphone, which means there's people all over. You've seen this. I bet in Rome it's an epidemic. People are walking around. You can hear both ends of the conversation. Bad enough, you can hear just one end. Now you hear both doofuses.
You know, that's the most riled up I've ever seen you.
Sorry.
This is like a reality TV show.
This I care about.
Get off my lawn.
Get off of my lawn. Our show today brought to you by Capterra. If you are in business and you know you've got this line of business software, you use it every day. I'll never forget. I started working at a radio station in San Francisco, KNBR, as the music director. And I go in the door, and I'm expecting, because I had written databases, I had written nice modern PC programs to do the music rotation. I walk in the door. There sits on the ground, because it's the size of a mini fridge, a PDP-11 with a giant 8.5-inch floppy that's the music generation program. You stick the floppy in, you close the door, goes, the head goes, chonk, and it prints out on a teletype, practically, the playlist. They'd been using it for probably 20 years. This is 1984, and the first thing I did was, I don't know how it happened, but somehow that floppy stopped working, and we had to go out and buy a modern computer to do it. You know this. If you work in business, there is some program that's been there for 20 years. You have to keep running Windows NT because nothing else will run it. You're using Internet Explorer. It's time for some modern software. There is almost certainly a better program out there, but where do you find it? Do you Google it? No. you go to Capterra. Capterra will help you find the perfect tools to make the right decision for software for your business. Whether it's running a veterinarian office or sending out marketing emails, managing your projects, designing 12-story office towers, to managing a yoga studio, Capterra's got it. 700 categories of software, thousands of different programs, and best of all, 750,000 reviews of products from people who actually use it. Capterra vets all those reviews and makes sure they're all real users. So you can go to capterra.com/twit and find exactly the software you need. The boss says to you, tomorrow I want you to come in with 5 great programs for running our dental office. You go to capterra.com. You check the boxes for what you need. You want it to run on the web? You want it to run locally? Do you want to be able to book clients, patients? You want to manage the schedule? Do you want to order products? What do you need? You check the boxes. It gives you all the programs that do that. Then you can put them in a comparison chart, read the reviews, go to the websites, even find out if there's free trials. You can get everything you need right there. It's the best way to find software for your business. And, you know, if you look at this and you say, well, how much would you pay for this? You'd probably say, oh, I'd pay $10 a month, $15. I'd pay $20 a month. It's free. Free. By the way, I got to update this. It is now 800,000 verified user reviews. There's more coming in all the time. This is actually the most used site for businesses to find the software they need. Millions of people use Capterra every month. And they just want you to know. They're there waiting to help you. Check out Capterra's free website. Absolutely free. CAPTERRA.com/twit. Stop using the PDP-11 and the 8.5-inch floppy that goes. Find the software that's right for your business. Capterra.com/twit. CAPTERRA.com/twit. Capterra, software selection simplified. We didn't have Capterra back in the day, well, but I just knew there was something better.
I've got a news flash, by the way.
Yes.
Trump said no collusion, no obstruction, complete and total exoneration.
Yes.
This is right after Barr said no exoneration.
No exoneration. But it's interesting that he didn't tweet at all for a long time.
For hours, right? Days.
He was sweating it a little bit, I think.
He was busy playing golf with Kid Rock.
But why would you
say... Which is the strangest picture I've ever seen in my life.
Why, in the middle of a victory lap, which he can, and I think he has the right to take at the moment, for short term, why would he put something that's patently false, that totally contradicts...
Why would anybody put anything nutty on Twitter?
Yeah.
Well...
Wait a minute. I'm sorry, Larry. You're saying Donald Trump said something untrue?
Yeah, shock. I know.
That's depressing. But
if you say If you say it enough, it's true. If you say it enough, it's true. You just say it over.
Remember, at the
over
beginning
again.
Of the show, I said anyone who's immediately saying one side or the other of the extreme.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you knew what was coming, obviously.
Yeah. No, but I didn't expect it to be so literally, and it's an all.
I totally expected that.
All uppercase.
Totally expected that.
Exoneration.
Totally expected that.
That should be the word.
He's had that tweet queued up and ready to. He probably put it in Hootsuite last year. He's had that. That tweet has been queued up and ready to fire. All right, ladies and gentlemen, let's conclude our broadcast day. Ed Bott, I love you. I love your Wilco poster. I want you on our show every week. You're just the greatest. Ed Bott Report on ZDNet.
Oh,
at
thank
Ed
you.
Bott on Twitter. Well, you're just this. You're just sensible. When I get all head up about stuff, you calm me down. You talk me off the ledge. And he's always been sensible. And I hate you for that. No, I'm kidding. Thank you, Ed, for being here. Have a great afternoon and evening in
Appreciate
Santa
it.
Fe.
He also married well, too.
I don't know his wife. You know his wife,
great,
obviously.
Yeah. I knew her when she was a PR person many years ago.
Judy is a treasure.
Yep.
Nice? It'll be 25 years since this December is when I met her, and it's been a great.
I think I've known her longer than you have. That's kind of scary.
We have a picture. We have a picture of ourselves standing back to back at an event in Silicon Valley, taken 3 years before we met.
Wow.
We were going through a box of photographs that she had, and pulls this one out, and she looks at it and says,
"You're
what?"
In this.
There you are.
I was ignoring you, Ed. Mr. Larry Magid, he is every morning bright and early at CBS News Radio, which is all over the country. KCBS here in San Francisco, WCBS in New York City. And CBS, I didn't realize, is the number 2 radio group in the country.
I didn't even know that.
Right after Clear Channel, yeah.
We have a lot of affiliates, though.
Yeah, it's huge.
Yep.
And if you want to read his work to save kids, to keep them safe online, connectsafely.org. There's lots of great resources there. Yeah.
And I'm going to launch larrysworld.com/twit. I don't know what I'm going to put there, but
I
feel
it.
Jealous. I have no twit like subdomain.
It. You need a twit subdomain and an offer code.
10% off on the free access to my site.
Exactly.
I pay you.
There's the offer code.
All right.
He's giving it away, folks.
Yeah.
Mr. Father Reverend Robert Ballasera, the digital Jesuit. Father Robert, it's so nice to see. Honestly, I wish we hadn't said goodbye to you all those months ago in the
big
party.
You knew I was going to come back.
We can't get rid of you.
Like, I know. It's,
bad
I love
penny.
This place.
No, we love you, and it's great to see you. Come back again. You'll be back for DEF CON probably next time, right?
Actually, I'm coming back for most of April because I have to do surgery for a cataract.
Oh. So you have a cataract?
I have a cataract.
You're too young to have a cataract.
No, it's a family thing.
I'm sorry.
But, they won't let me fly for a while after that because I have to do a couple of appointments.
Oh, so you're going to miss DEF CON this year?
No, I will be here for DEF CON.
Oh, you have to stay here?
Just for April, and then I'll
you
be
have
gone
to stay.
Again.
I get it.
Yeah.
You could have the surgery in Italy, but then you'd be stuck with the spaghetti, so you're going to come here.
Well, No. The problem with doing it in Italy is because I just got there, it will take me at least a year to schedule the surgery. Right? You can do it there, fine. It's not a problem, but I kind of need this taken care of now because I'm blind in my right eye, and it's really affecting how I work.
Robert, I had no idea. I'm sorry. Will you be all better after the surgery?
Oh, yeah. I'll still be me, so that's a problem. But I'll see better.
You'll be able to play the piano?
Yeah.
Well,
will I be able to play the guitar?
Get a nice eye patch, and we'll see you in April. How about that?
Yeah.
That would be really nice to know that you can. Can you come up and do that?
Of course.
You can't fly, but you could drive.
I can drive.
Sure. What could go wrong?
Well, you can ride in your Model X. It could self-drive.
You can drive up here and drive back. Yeah. Absolutely.
And then it will crash because someone hacked it. But
We wind up the show with this small video of the CEO of AT&T, Randall Stephenson, speaking at the Economic Club. Oh, you know, I got to turn off all the things that prevent me from playing videos back here. Here, we'll do it one more time.
It's a great story.
You were the CFO for many of that.
I was, for a lot of that. And I'm getting a robocall, too.
You got a message now, right now?
He's getting a robocall on his Apple Watch.
For him. From President Trump or somebody? No,
somebody wants to sell him a timeshare in beautiful Hawaii.
If only there was a company that could find a way to block that.
AT&T, if only there were a way. That robocall could be from, I wonder if it's from John Oliver. Wouldn't that be hysterical?
Or even Kevin Noonan's mom.
Kevin Noonan's mom or cow?
Robocow.
Robocow. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for being here. We do Twit every Sunday afternoon. We've moved the time up a little bit, although let us make the show longer. So really gained nothing. 2:15 Pacific, 5:15 Eastern. That's 21:15 UTC. If you want to watch live, you can go to twit.tv/live. You can listen live, too. We've got two audio streams there. If you'd like to join us in studio, we had a great studio audience. People from all over. Manchester, New Hampshire. We had Florida, Toronto, and Fort Worth, where the West begins. If you want to be part of our studio audience, just email tickets@twit.tv so we can put an uncomfortable chair out for you. We've done pretty well, right? Nice? Uncomfortable? Yeah, good. I'm a little bit of a sadist. We get the most uncomfortable chair we can, and then we make the show as long as possible. Yeah. And it's fun to watch.
We've also been pumping neurotoxin into the studio. So enjoy.
That explains a lot. If you can't watch live, we've got on-demand versions of the show, audio and video, at twit.tv. That's our website. Best of all. Hey, look, there's Father Robert.
Hey.
You are also wearing the same shirt you wore last time.
And the thing is, it is literally the same shirt. I have not watched this from day one at Twit. This actually started off white.
Last week, Ian was really upset because he's wearing the same shirt that he wore in this picture at the top of the page at twit.tv. And then I pointed out, well, that's okay because Robert is. And in fact, right. I was as well.
It's a uniform.
Yeah.
You have to wear a uniform.
No. Part of the deal. Yeah. Twit.tv or subscribe in your favorite podcast application. And that way you get a copy of it the minute it's available. Plenty of time for your Monday morning commute. We'll be back here tomorrow, 10 a.m. Pacific. That's 1 p.m. Eastern time, 1700 UTC, for the big Apple pivot. Should be a very interesting stream, and we'll be and we'll stay up as long as we can. So we're taking bets now. We got the charts, the bingo chart already, if anybody wants to make a wager as to how long. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time. Another twit is in the can. Bye-bye.